Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Very nice, Mr. Criscolo.
Why did you clean the floor? Why did you plaster over the hole I punched in the door? This is where we used to live. Why did you keep the mousetrap? Why did you keep...
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero. We have a great episode planned for you here tonight. We are going back deep inside the vintage vault and pulling out what many would consider possibly a gem, what many consider a disappointment. And we will break that down, wrap it up, and deliver it to you. But to do that, first of all, I need to bring in my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
JR, always a pleasure, sir. And on this Thursday evening as we're recording, NFL draft night, both our big picks are passed, so now we can focus. It is episode 124 of the Place to Be podcast, and as my PIC mentioned, we are delving into the big silver box that is the Vintage Vault, but because it is a special show, we have a special guest, and the first two times he has come on to do vaults, we've been interesting circumstances, but tonight, hopefully with a show like this, he's settling right in with one of the guys that's in the first match. But anyway, he is the purveyor of the history of WWE.com and one of our dearest friends deep down in the heart of Flair Country in North Kakalaki. It is Graham Coffin. GC,
hey,
how are you?
How are you? Good, good. Glad to be back on. Glad we're not talking about King of the Ring 95.
No, not at all.
Yes, big, big difference this time around.
Yes. All right, tonight we open up the cage. Is he in there?
Hey, what is going on here?
Graham's a new student. He wants to date Lisa Turtle. Anyway, but she's mine, damn it. Okay. Anyway, tonight on the Vintage Vault, we quote one of the greatest rock bands of all time, and that is the great Black Sabbath. And actually, the theme song of the challenger to become champion. One of my great favorite tag... Oh, never mind. We can't talk about them now. To quote Ozzy Osbourne, I am Iron Man.
The crowning achievement in a lifetime of yearning. It is the dream of the champion to aspire to excellence, his legacy indelibly etched in the annals of time. Shawn Michaels, the confident challenger, a maverick who spits in the face of adversity. Bret Hart, a triumph of tenacity, the mighty ring general who stands in defiance of defeat. Tonight, for one illustrious hour in the Iron Man match, we will witness their passion, applaud their heroics, marvel at their gift to enthrall. Two craftsmen engaged in an extraordinary athletic event. Two men bound by the dream. After 60 grueling minutes, one man, exhausted, will have his arm raised high. The quest realized, the challenge overcome. One man, expended, will breathe loneliness, unwilling to surrender. He will have been stripped of the dream.
Welcome to the Anaheim Pod!
Indeed.
Very low, very serious, very down to earth was the open there. Not the happy-go-lucky Todd Pettengill opens we've had in the previous few shows.
No, tonight. You know, and we talked about it just to quickly go off track quickly. In late 95, we talked about how they really started to focus on the sports builds and really put over the athleticism and the backgrounds of each guys, and that started around Survivor Series, and you could see it definitely continued to build up here.
Yes, and even though we'll get into that in a minute. Tonight on the Vintage Vault, here on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you WrestleMania 12. And again, as my PIC said, some people consider this a gem, others consider this losing its luster over time. We will break it down for you. March 31st, 1996, live from the Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim, California. You know, I was thinking about this. You know, JR, you and I always talk about, you know, what the hell Vince's affinity was with Anaheim. And I want to bring Graham, you into this question as well. Do you think maybe the reasoning was in this time in the mid-90s, you know, obviously the threat from WCW, his competition was real. He wanted to kind of spread out around the country. But he realized the product was not stellar. So maybe going into LA might be a little bit over his head at this time. And maybe he wanted to do something West Coast, but on a kind of a smaller scale. And maybe that's why he picked Anaheim over, say, Los Angeles or maybe even San Diego. What do you think of that, Graham?
Having never been to California, I've been fortunate to visit a lot of the states, but I haven't made it to the West Coast so much. How close is Anaheim to LA?
It's fairly close, right?
It's pretty close. Yeah.
So if he was to run a show in Anaheim, LA media would still care about it.
Yeah, I would think so. Most likely.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
I think that coupled with the fact I don't think they were running LA that much, and I don't know if that was a situation with the sports arena or what, but I think Anaheim was kind of their Los Angeles venue. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking probably just for the publicity, because short of New York, that's probably their big, you know, publicity wise, promotion wise, that's probably their next biggest market.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, even during the days of the Federation years, he rarely went to the Forum, which obviously was the sexier looking venue of the two in the city. He always went to the LA Sports Arena. Obviously, at this point, there were 1.5 WrestleManias there.
It's like WCW ran the Forum, and then he always had the Sports Arena.
I don't even think that the WCW, but it's weird, even in the late 80s when NWA didn't even go out there that much, he didn't do the Forum. But even the house shows, they always went to the LA Sports Arena.
Yeah.
Weird. So, in any event, after 1 year, two straight years on the East Coast for WrestleManias, obviously at Madison Square Garden in Hartford, Connecticut, he moves 3,000 miles over, and we have the first WrestleMania on the West Coast. Well, if you count Vegas, but first California WrestleMania in 5 years, as that one, of course, was in Los Angeles. Your announcers, you heard one of them at the open there, the always iconic Vincent Kennedy McMahon, and, of course, in the color seat, the King, Jerry Lawler. I got a question about Lawler, though, when we get to the main event. You and I, JR, have been talking about color commentators over the last couple of pay-per-views. I have an interesting query as we get to the main event. Your attendance, not a bad one for this time of the year, 18,852. That's a good crowd for mid-90s. Should not sneeze at that. And the buy rate, 1.2. It's WrestleMania. Usually it's pretty good regardless.
And, of course, right off the bat, the first glaring thing is that there's no celebrities this year.
Nope.
They overloaded at WrestleMania 11, and then they go the opposite here. They have zero celebrities. So first time in a while where there was absolutely none.
Right. Yes. No, there were none at all. I think this goes to your theory about the fact that he's focusing more on the sports aspect of it and about the athleticism and the competition more than the glitz and the glamour. And from an aesthetics viewpoint, a first and only time in the history of any WWF pay-per-view, there was actually something on the canvas, and that was the WrestleMania 12 logo. Obviously, WCW had something on the canvas all the time, whether it's a Nitro logo or, you know, some sponsor splashed all over the place for some pay-per-view. WCW always had something on the canvas, and even ECW usually either had the logo on their canvas. But for the first and only time in WWF pay-per-view history. Something is on the canvas for the show. And that was the... Why do you think they did that? Just for the heck of it, you think?
Yeah, just to be different.
To make something it special. Different.
Yeah. Never did it again, though. Maybe Vince didn't like it. All right, JR, we have a, of course, the now common monthly free-for-all match. But again, this one's got a little juice to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first match, we have the finals of the tag team title tournament. Of course, the titles were taken away from the Smoking Guns when Billy was injured following the Royal Rumble. And I'm going to test Graham right out of the gate.
Oh, boy.
Graham, tag team tournament. Do you remember the matchups in the first round?
Vaguely.
Okay. Do you want me to give you like one of them and you try and guess who they fought?
All right. I'll do. See, we got the New Rockers against the God Ones, correct?
Yes. Yep. God Ones advanced there.
I believe that was Al Snow's first appearance as Leaf Cassidy.
It was, because I remember it was always shown as Marty Jannetty and TBD to be determined for a few weeks, and then they revealed the New Rockers.
And Marty couldn't find a partner until
like I always remember being like, who the hell is it going to be? I don't know. Is it going to be Sean coming back or something?
And then you had Davey and Owen, who I always thought were going to make it to the finals, against Hakushi and Barry Horowitz. Correct?
It was Owen and Davey against Hakushi and Barry Horowitz, yes.
Okay.
And Owen and Davey advanced to face the Godwins.
Okay. And then on the other end, you got the Body Donnas, who obviously made it to the finals. I want to say they opened against the Bushwhackers.
Tremendous. 3-for-3. The Body Donnas advanced there.
Who did they beat next?
I'm already very impressed.
Yeah, this is good.
Who did they beat next?
One of the team that advanced did not remain.
Oh. It had to do with like Razor was somehow involved.
Mm-hmm.
Or Savio.
Yep, they were a team.
Okay.
And they won. I'll give you another second here before people tune out.
Yeah, it's fun when I'm just ripping through them.
All right. I'll reveal. It was 1-2-3 Kid and Tatanka. So, $1 million team there.
Oh, okay.
And Razor and Savio advanced. But Razor, of course, going through his personal issues, which we'll get to further later, was replaced by...
No recollection.
Steve Austin. Former ringmaster.
Oh, that's... Okay.
They were stuck crazy. Together by President Roddy Piper. And
that asshole.
And Body Donnas won after Austin and Vega had some issues. So the finals here, Body Donnas and the Godwins. Just 5 minutes, and the Body Donnas defeated Henry and Phineas to win the tag team titles. Now, Scott, we didn't talk about Phineas, have we yet?
We have not talked about Brother Pig as of yet.
Okay, well, Phineas was portrayed by Dennis Knight. He was actually a teammate of Henry Godwin when he was... Tex Slassenger and Shanghai Paris in WCW in the early 90s. Yes. Yep. He started in Florida, went to the USWA for a little bit, always teamed along with Mark Canterbury. They moved to WCW. Canterbury left, of course, as we've talked about in late 94, and Knight would return to the USWA where he stayed until being brought in here to reunite with Canterbury as Phineas I. Godwin. So, of course, we had Hog, and now we have Pig. And the Godwins are now managed by Hillbilly Jim.
I'm going to take a shot in the dark here. The I stood for Ignatius.
I don't think they ever said.
Oh, okay. I like that though. We're going to call him that. No.
Okay. Orpheus and Ignatius.
Orpheus and Ignatius. Yes. So, all right. So there is your new World Wrestling Federation tag team champion. Yes,
and of course, Sunny's Wiles. She distracted Phineas, who was revealed around this time that he had a crush on her, and she takes advantage of that and leads. Yes. The Body Donnas to win the titles.
Yes. A common theme over the next few months, both on Raw and on pay-per-view. So there you go. Our first title, not really change, but our first title won here at WrestleMania. Of course, not on camera officially, not on the pay-per-view, but the Body Donnas are the tag team champions. Now, yes. JR, were you with the West Warwick Mafia, or were you alone with... Did Dad fall asleep in the first match? Or
I think it was just us. I can't remember who else would have been there. Maybe Josh. I'm not sure.
Graham, where were you on this fine evening in 1996? Do you remember?
I was growing up a military kid, bounced around a lot at this point. I was in Panama City, Florida. and we did not.
Were you booking
have...
Nitro?
Oh, I wish we moved before they started running Nitro there. I was pissed. We honestly lived in the sticks to the point where we could not get pay per view.
Oh God!
And so yes, I was pissed. I came from Metro DC where you know you could get anything, and then I moved to this place and couldn't get anything. And so I remember that night I was pissed. So I was playing the I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but the WrestleMania arcade game.
Yes.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Or I want to say it was the Super Nintendo version, and I was playing Brett versus Shawn all night.
Ah.
Anything could happen to the World Wrestling Federation.
Yes.
Boom.
Yes, I was with my college, well, post college friends, Dr. G and the crew. I remember this very vividly because the next day was opening day at Shea, the Mets and the Cardinals. I remember going the next day and they won, and then they lost like 11 of the next 12. But anyway, I do remember going. I remember watching it with. It was actually the first WWF pay per view I watched live in quite a while. Actually, I was getting back into it again. Okay, now we have one more free for all. I'm going to leave this to you, JR, because this is all your thing. So I'll leave it to you.
In history.
Well, Macho Man.
Macho Man. Introduced from Rogaine, Florida, just a little south of St. Peter's.
Look at this.
And trying to get to the bottom rope and not having much success. Typical Millionaire Network News studio audience on hand. I understand President Reagan is watching this match, but he won't remember it. Hopefully, not ever wait. And a little prompting, I guess, never heard.
Now, wait a minute. Here we go. Take a look at this.
California. From Geriatric Beach, California. He's got the crew.
If you want.
Oh, they look more like earthworms, McMahon.
How about if we, looks like it's going to take him a while to get to the ring. How about if we fast forward a little bit here, King?
All right, I'll hit the old X-Lax fast forward button. Look at this.
Wow, that's really effective.
And look at the Huckster.
And of course, the Huckster's axioms, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait a minute, McMahon. There's the Huckster's blue haired granddaughter.
Granddaughter?
Can't get him better.
And everyone knows the Huckster's three commandments.
What's that?
Take your Jericho, say your last rites, and never miss your physical therapy. And look at the Huckster.
Well, wait a minute. I think we've seen this lady somewhere before. Nice flag, huh?
Yeah. Hey, King. Don't be nodding off now. Come on. Clap on, clap off. Come on, get out. King. Hey.
Is it over yet?
Well, but the Huckster is never over. And, well, look at this. He's having some difficulty getting his shirt off. Steam Team and Billionaire Ted trying to rip that off.
We'll end with that zinger by the King. And of course, the second match was the Huckster clashing with the Nacho Man. Billionaire Ted was a special guest referee there. And of course, this is the culmination for all the Billionaire Ted skits that had started at the beginning of January. Graham, Scott and I kind of beat these into the ground ad nauseum at the Rumble. What's your take on this whole concept that they put together?
You know, really, at the time, it had me siding with WCW. Because I think they were putting out a better product. Aside from the Hogan Savage main events, I thought they were putting on a better product. And I just thought these jabs were so childish and not really funny. And they were investing so much time and energy into them that it just made them look bad.
And, I concur with you.
And looking back 15, 16 years later, it makes them look even worse. How would you devote this time at your biggest show of the year to put down your competition, especially for Vince, who typically doesn't even acknowledge the competition? I mean, that kind of shows how much he was up against the wall.
I at the time I kind of liked it because I thought it was like good to see them finally firing back and showing something. I know you say they put a lot of time and effort into just trashing WCW, but don't forget, a lot of that had to do with rebelling against the way Eric Bischoff had been treating them on Nitro, giving away the results and trashing them in the Alundra Blaze thing. So
it wasn't one-sided, I'll give you that.
Right. At the time, it seemed like Vince was just kind of laying down and taking the beating for Bischoff, trying to do the whole thing where he usually did, which was ignore the competition. And I think it was kind of a nice thing to see him finally say, you know what, fuck you, we're fighting back. And I think this could have been done better if they had maybe only three or four of these and maybe they had this match at the Rumble and just kind of blew the thing off. But the fact that they stretched it out for 3 months and some of the ones at the end got very, very mean-spirited and Just weren't as funny towards the end. I thought the earlier ones were cute, but I think by this point it was actually, I didn't think this match was that bad either. I thought it was pretty funny, but
and to add to that, not to interrupt you, but to add to that, Hogan and Savage themselves, like, I understand Vince firing back against WCW as a company and Eric Bischoff as a rival, but Hogan and Savage are kind of untouchable.
Mm.
Like, I think Hogan, the only person that can bury Hulk Hogan is himself, which he's done in recent years. but really, it makes the WWF in 1996 look stupid for trying to tear down the same guys that they put up on a pedestal, especially Savage right now. I mean, everyone loves Savage. He just passed away last year, and no one can really say anything bad about him and his influence and what he brought it to the industry. I just think it seems like a hollow shot at WCW that really wasn't that effective.
Oh, it definitely wasn't effective. I don't think it accomplished anything. I can see why he felt like he needed to do something radical like that. And I think he was just trying to get eyeballs turned his way instead of kind of laughing at him with what Bischoff had done. But thankfully, this all ends here. Actually, there might have been one more. I can't remember if that last skit's after Mania or before, where they did like the quiz show or whatever, and then they had Vince asking everyone to call the FCC against Ted to block Ted's merger or whatever the hell he was trying to do. Just kind of got out of control at that point.
Yeah, and I think that at this point, the whole, you know, I guess what I always go back to when we talk about these things is what you said, JR, about the sport and everything was very all about the competition and everything. And this just seemed, by the end, it just seemed out of place. While all the other you know, storylines are involving well, except the Goldust Razor one, but it was all about the competition and the athleticism. And then you got these weird, semi-funny in the beginning, unfunny skits at the end, and it seemed out of place at this point. But at least they blew it off. And actually, the quips between Vince and the King right here were actually very funny.
I thought the commentary wasn't bad. And I mean, you know, it took up some creative and TV time, but they were usually pretty quick on TV. So it's not like they took up huge amounts of time. And I'll give them credit. Nowadays, this would have been on the main pay-per-view instead of the pre-show.
Yeah.
So at least it was on the...
Yeah, I was about to say that. At least they didn't make anybody pay to watch it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it got people to buy the pay-per-view, but usually WrestleMania, they never had any major problems. So, although this time, this might have been one they needed to kind of pimp a bit, because obviously the last 6 months, the product was not stellar. So maybe they did need a little extra oomph to get people to buy this show.
And it only goes like 3 minutes anyway, so it's fine. So, all right, let's move on to the main show.
Yes. All right, let's get on to the opener. A pretty brisk, somewhat fun kind of six-man tag here with some fun personalities here. We've got the Camp Cornette-laden team of Vader, who is back in regular rotation. The Rocket, Owen Hart, coming off a very tough loss to Shawn Michaels at In Your House number 6, and the British Bulldog. Taking on the team of the now turned face, well, not now turned face, but baby face Yokozuna, Jake the Snake, and our favorite big brick shithouse, the big Modib. I'm Ed.
So big Modib.
Modib. So come on, you must have a Modib autograph somewhere on your bathroom wall, Graham. Come on.
I probably do.
Everyone must need a Modib.
And it better be an actual Modib one and not a Ahmed Johnson one.
Yeah, he should have written. I mean, you know, but if he tries to sign Ahmed Johnson, it might look like Modib. Got to really know. Anyway, okay. This was originally supposed to be the long. Okay. Although we would have liked if you had kept him Modib. He might have been a long, more enduring character. But anyway.
Or Neptune.
Yeah. Okay. This was originally supposed to be a singles match. The long-awaited Battle of the Beef between Vader and Yoko. But on the March 18th Raw, the Snake laid down the challenge to Jim Cornette after he took on the British Bulldog. It was then revealed in the fine print of the contract that if Yoko, Jake, and Moadib won the match, Yoko would get 5 minutes in the ring with the head counselor, if you will, of Camp Cornette.
And I always liked the build after that promo when they had the – or it might have been on Superstars, actually. They had the dummy in the ring with the balloon head, and Yoko squashed it, and it was dressed up like Cornette. I thought that was kind of neat. Graham, do you know why they changed this? Was there any reason, or just to get these guys on the card?
That's what I'm imagining. And honestly, I thought Vader versus Yoko was a great match to have for WrestleMania.
Mm, I agree.
I mean, Yoko, 2-time world champion, Vader just coming off his WCW run and just coming in as a monster at the Rumble. So I thought that was pretty much a kind of match that you save for WrestleMania. So I would imagine the only reason they got the other four guys involved was to get them on the show. And then we got Yoko versus Vader spread out over the next 2 or 3 months or so.
Yeah, I'm going to say there's three reasons. One, they wanted to get those guys on the show, specifically Bulldog Owen and Ahmed as well. I think Jake didn't really matter. But I also think it kind of what you said, they didn't really want to blow off Yoko and Vader now, because you can't have Yoko beat him clean. Vader just, you know, was coming in and you end the feud pretty much if Vader just beats him here. That's, I don't know, it's just kind of pointless to continue on. So I understand why they switched it to this. And also, do you think Vader was still kind of rehabbing that injury that he was coming back from? So maybe they decided to hide him in the six man.
That could be. That could very well be the reason it was made a six man.
Because you figure they could have put Owen and Bulldog maybe in the tag tournament, you know, and then had you know, Jake and you couldn't keep Moadib off because he was still one of the hot guys on the roster. So he would have had to go somewhere on this show.
Right.
And I think the same would be said for Jake. He had just come back at the Rumble. He was super hot. He was getting pops.
I guess they could have done a separate tag match, but they probably figured they didn't really have the time for both.
Mm. Could be.
It's entirely possible. We have a farewell to talk about, and I know, JR, you absolutely do not want to do this. I could make you do it, but what the heck? I'll spare you the.
Get ready for this stupid hoodie out the face, because it's time to meet the real superstar of WWF. I'm going to meet you, and no one's going to come say the story.
So, Graham, was that the first ad promoting your website?
Yeah, that sounds like it.
No,
is that what that was? Cool. History.WWE.com.
I can hear you guys great. I could not make out one word he said.
All right. I'm going to spare my PIC because I know he has zero interest in doing this. But this is the actual final pay-per-view appearance for one of the most enduring managers of the Federation era, and that is Mr. Fuji.
Mr. Fuji-san.
Ah, Fuji-san, one of your favorites. All right, let me ask you straight out right now. We want a straight answer from you, JR. Who did you hate more, Mr. Fuji or Frenchie Martin?
Frenchie Martin. I didn't hate Mr. Fuji. I just thought he was kind of useless as a manager. Like, I think he never really accomplished much after the demolition fiasco. And then he dumps them as champions. That made even less sense. And then he always just seemed kind of to stand there and throw saw. I don't know. He didn't really ever seem to be any kind of strategist or do anything positive for his clients. And even Yoko didn't really pick up steam until they had to bring Cornette in to help him manage him. So I don't hate him. I just think he was kind of pointless. Frenchie Martin I actively hate because he was fucking stupid. Although the one I hate the most is still Albano.
Okay. I'm surprised that he's not managing the Body Donnas.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't.
He might think he's better looking than Sonny. He literally knows. Okay, so Fuji had decided to retire from the business prior to the show due to some injuries that had prevented him from traveling.
But it's amazing he was still around, honestly.
I think so too. I mean, pretty much Cornette was running things.
Well, yeah, but even as a face, like, he stuck around with.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it just he realized that, you know, the product was changing and, you know, Vince was trying to get the younger demo and, you know. I don't know. But he obviously was – I mean, he was up there in years. At this point, he had to have been in his, I don't know, late 50s, early 60s at this point, probably. So,
older than that, right, Graham?
How old do you think he is, Graham?
I met him 3 years ago, and I'm not certain he knew where he was.
Well, here we go.
So I'm being nice then.
He was born in 35. So, Scott, you were born 2 years later. So,
yep.
Take care.
Yeah. So, I'm right. He was 61.
Yeah,
he was 61.
You said late 40s, early 50s, didn't you?
No, I said late 50s. No, I said late 50s, early 60s. 61. So now he's, God only knows. Well, now he's, what, 76, I guess, something like that? Okay. Anyway, he was in his early 60s, and he made a special appearance here at ringside with Yoko. So here was his, like, his baby face thing.
Yep.
Fuji retired to Knoxville, Tennessee, where he is living now. Is that where you met him, Graham, or did you meet him, like, was he at the Fan Fest? Or?
Yeah, he was at Fan Fest a couple years back.
Okay. Was he sitting outside in front with Ole? Are they talking to each other?
No.
Okay. In 1997, he sued the makers of the video game WCW versus NWO World Tour, claiming that the character Master Fuji was based on him.
Really? Where did you get that idea?
I know. Who would have thunk that, really?
That? Yeah. And I can't imagine Fuji decided to do it lawsuit himself, so I'm sure there was someone involved in his ear.
Though the base of this character was actually Japanese wrestler Yoshiaki Fujiwara, he was actually close enough to Mr. Fuji that the lawsuit was settled in Fuji's favor. Hmm. He also operated two training dojos in Tennessee until 2001, and of course, 6 years later, he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame by his former charge and co-star of such legendary Oscar-winning performances as Fuji Vice, Fuji Medical, and whatever the cowboy one was, The Rock, Don Morocco. So there we go. Mr. Fuji off into the sunset. Anyway, we were talking about the match, and I mean, I think it's not a bad match. I mean, it's, you know, it's a decent opener. Crowd's hot for the baby faces. Vader's a badass as always. You know, nothing...
They keep it moving enough. I mean, that's the one positive of not going with Yoko and Vader. You get these six guys, and they can tag in and out and keep things fresh.
Yeah. Graham, what do you think?
I thought it was fine. I was honestly, and in retrospect, this sounds stupid, but I was honestly surprised that Jake did the job.
Mm.
Just because he had just come back at the Rumble, got over huge. That was one of the biggest moments at the pay-per-view, and he was over. And I think as a even as a teenager, I was buying into his return, so I didn't really expect him to lose that often. But essentially, after this show, he becomes enhancement guy. He becomes, you know, the guy that brings credibility to the table, but he's just there to put over the new talent.
Who would you have, you know, laid down in this match, and if not Jake?
Well, with that added stipulation, you got to give it to Team Cornette. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought that was an obvious result. But, you know, with a salt bucket, you could hit Ahmed in the head. You could hit Yoko in the head, or with a loaded tennis racket. So I really thought, you know.
Well, Ahmed was undefeated here, though, right? I think they wanted to keep that going for a while.
Yes, yeah. He didn't lose to Vader for, I think, another 2 or 3 months.
I could have seen Yoko eating the pin here. I mean, at least to enhance. I mean, you could have had him cheap hit with the tennis racket or something, or
just,
you know,
to
enhance the feud.
And Vader.
Yeah, exactly. Just to enhance that feud. But, no. Jake obviously needed the work, and he would have done whatever was necessary. So
this is true.
Yeah, I don't think it's that big a deal. I don't think it's...
No, I mean, I think Jake was pretty bulletproof anyway at that point, so...
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. The Camp Cornette gaining steam with a big win to open WrestleMania 12 as Vader, the Rocket, and the Bulldog take out, defeat Yoko, Moadib, and the Snake. So, all right. Next up is... I don't know. It's kind of my... This is kind of my that's the word I'm thinking of. Bane of my existence, I guess. This whole thing after 15 years still bothers me. This
really?
Entire setup, yeah, it really does. I don't think it needed to be drawn out this much. But anyway, okay. Our match is the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, the bizarre one. Thank you. Waiting for that. But not in a title match here. Taking on the current interim president of the World Wrestling Federation, the Hot Rod, no, not Kieran Polland, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Obviously, common sense would have told you that this was where Razor Ramon was going to get his rematch.
Right.
And maybe win back his Intercontinental title. That didn't happen. Because finally... I don't say finally. It's not really. Unfortunately, the demons finally caught up to the bad guy, and he was sent off to rehab.
Now, Graham, do you know at this point was it known? I forget if it was known they were negotiating, right? With WCW.
I would imagine so, because in the build-up to the next In Your House, which would have been, I mean, the Raws were taped the next night. I remember Cornette and Vader do an interview about Vader facing Razor.
Right, yep.
Yep.
And Cornette says, something to the effect of, you know, I hear you've been making some, you know, business decisions lately. Well, this was a bad business decision for you to make to face Vader.
Right. So I think it was known a little bit. And it's also a little fishy, too, that they happen to pop him for a drug test, something that hadn't happened at all, and all of a sudden he's suspended for it.
Before a huge payday.
Right, exactly. So I'm guessing word was out at this point. And I remember being pretty surprised, and Scott and I will talk about this more when we get to Good Friends, Better Enemies with our next review, but I remember being shocked when Razor was announced to that match, because I think I just assumed he was gone already at that point, because he had just disappeared in February, and then we didn't see him again. So that match is scrapped. We never get the blow-off, and President Piper puts himself in this position. Him and Goldust had a confrontation, and Goldust started taunting him, doing his same kind of mind game things, with one of the best ones coming here. And of course, it'll just devolve into more bizarreness from there. But and there he's on the set of the old Piper's Pit, which was a pretty nice touch. So Piper played the homophobe quite well, and that built up this feud very nicely. And it was announced a couple weeks before the show they would fight in a Hollywood back brawl match. And as we would see here, the match started in a back lot behind the arena. Well, I assume it was behind the arena. It was meant to be like on a Hollywood set back lot. So, Graham, what did you think of this portion of the match?
It was strange. It was very hard for me. You had invested into Razor and Goldust. I mean, that had essentially been going on since December. And for them to come in really just a few weeks before WrestleMania and swap out Razor, who was super hot and had direction, and you wanted to see a payoff here, to swap him in with Piper, who, I don't know, he's Piper, but I kind of thought he had lost a step at this point. I thought, honestly, he got better when he first got to WCW. Mm-hmm. And Goldust, I think I appreciate Goldust a whole lot more now than I did at the time.
Definitely.
Just in hearing that clip, all the innuendo there that I don't think I would have gotten at that time.
No, he was good. He was, you know, this was still where he was hot, the character. I don't think he really started to taper off until about June. But here he's still really, really good with some of the stuff he was doing. Piper, I think the reason they put him in this type of match was to hide those deficiencies you mentioned, Graham, and that's why they had him brawling around outside. And this was a really stiff match. If you go back and watch it, these two really beat the shit out of each other. There's one shot where Piper just punches him square in the head, and then he starts shaking his hand, looking like he broke it. So they really lay into each other.
It's been a long time since I've seen the backlot fight, and then the fight back to the ring. I don't know. It's okay. I think it bodes well for the WrestleMania highlight package. Mm. But as a viewer, I don't know.
I agree with you, Graham. I mean, I actually agree with both of you. JR, I agree with you that I love these 4 minutes of just them pasting each other.
Right.
I love the nut shot that Goldust gives him back, and he's slamming his face into the catering table and smacks his head on the hood of the gold Cadillac, by the way. Incredible touch. And that part was awesome. And then I would have been happy if they just got into the ring at this point. Piper beats the shit out of him and we're done.
Probably.
No, of course not. Nothing could be that simple. Nothing could be straight, cut and dry, and just get it done. No. Then they got a Goldust hops back in his Cadillac and drives off. All right, I'm fine with that. All right, whatever. He's running away, whatever. Then Piper gets into, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to get into like a, I don't know, a car or something, I don't know, or something painted plaid or something, whatever. No. What does he get into?
I picture him driving on a plaid caddy.
That'd be awesome. Are you kidding me? Instead, he gets into a white Bronco. Really? Good God. That's ridiculous. And then the rest of it's just, well, as we move along, the rest of the this undercard, we'll get more into it. But that was just absolutely stupid.
Yeah, I think it should have ended in one segment. I think they should have called it there. And I like the portion of the back lot. It's only 4 minutes, and I really think they beat the crap out of each other. I think it devolves once they get into the cars. But even the shot where Goldust runs him over, I thought was kind of cool. So I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good little fight.
Question for you guys. I don't think I've researched this myself, but do we know when that part was taped?
I think it was earlier in the day.
You think so?
Yeah, I think it was in the morning.
That was shot like,
I feel like it's either in Piper's book or Goldust's book. I don't remember if I got that far into Goldust. I forget, but
I haven't started his book yet, but I think it was that morning.
Okay. Because
when you look at the chase, which we'll get to in a minute when we talk about the next match, I think they had, like, I mean, obviously they probably doctored the timestamp, but I think it was like, I don't know, 11 o'clock in the morning, which would have made it like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not sure, but I think it was earlier in the day. I think it was earlier in the day.
Because I would imagine that was pre-taped package. They knew how long that was going to run.
Yeah, I don't know. Just, I didn't think it added anything to the show. I think the undercard could have stood on its own. But anyway, there's your part one of this, which really was the better part of the two. And then so Goldust drives off in his gold Cadillac, and Piper drives off in the white Bronco. So stupid. All right. Next up is the reason why the reason why I'm so upset about this, because I really, really like this match. We have Savio Vega, the 1995 like workhorse of the year, taking on, now we can actually call him the former ringmaster. We already mentioned him because he was in the tag team tournament, and that is, of course, Steve Austin. However, at this point, he is no longer called the ringmaster. At this time, the peach fuzz blonde hair and the silly green tights and the JR beloved Hollywood blondes boots
yes,
are now gone. And now we see the shaved head, goatee, black tights, black boots.
Now, he had that look, though, as ringmaster still. He had already changed his look before he showed up as Stone Cold.
Okay.
Only for like a week or two, I think. And then he came out as, just randomly on the March 11th Raw. They just said, oh, Stone Cold Steve Austin in the ring. And he fought Savio there. They went to a double count out. Of course, it was stemming, like we said, from the split in the tag tournament. So, right. Yeah, just a match here to really put Austin over as Steve Austin and get him a win on pay-per-view. And I always like this match as well, 10 minutes. Savio was really good in that face underdog role where he just got the shit kicked out of him for a while and then tried to make a comeback. Graham, what did you think of the ringmaster-Austin switch? You think it could have happened any quicker, or do you think it was it was going to happen no matter what?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I had been watching WWF for so long that I kind of anticipated the crappy gimmicks. I mean, it just kind of came with the territory. But I was glad that they made it a little less hokey. He could actually speak now.
Mm-hmm.
DiBiase was still there. DiBiase would stick around for a little bit longer.
Right, he still had the $1 million title.
Right. You know, with that match that you had mentioned, I remember watching that live going, Austin's going to kill this guy.
Mm-hmm.
They actually go to a double count out. And I, you know, for someone that had been watching the Hollywood Blondes and when he was U.S. champion, and not really considering the fact, well, he's still kind of new in the WWF. I saw that double count out as honestly kind of devaluing Austin. And with this win, he, you know, kind of gets his spotlight at WrestleMania.
Right. I thought it was effective to set up this match. But I agree with you. It did seem like kind of an upset at the time. And because Savio was booked strongly enough, but not really much since you know, King of the Ring when he really had that. So,
and this match, again, like you said, JR, excellent, very well wrestled. Unfortunately, you weren't supposed to care about this match. It was just supposed to be two guys in the ring because, God forbid, we can pay attention to the match while listening to silly phone calls. I guess Piper, as president of the WWF, had a phone in his white Bronco and was giving us updates on the unbelievably stupid chase going on in a surprisingly quiet freeway in downtown Los Angeles.
Yes, I know.
Who'd have thunk that? Who'd have thunk the highway was going to be empty at what, 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon in the middle of the spring? I mean, just so stupid, and really screws these guys over in giving them the legit time they deserve. Graham, what did you think of that? That these guys, 10 minutes, really good match, but I bet you 70% of the average wrestling fan didn't even remember who was in the match.
Right. And I would agree with that. And that stuff really reminds me of what you would have seen on Nitro at that point. You'd see Eddie Guerrero facing Chris Benoit in the ring. And Hulk Hogan just showed up in his monster truck outside the arena. Let's go to that for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It was stupid. It definitely did hurt the match quite a bit. I agree.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I just think the whole... You know, this kind of footage reminds me a little bit of OJ, but it's not. This is Piper driving around. It was just dumb. It was so dumb. You know, even I didn't necessarily get – I don't think the first time I – like I said, I didn't get to watch the pay-per-view. I had to rent it about a month later. But I don't necessarily remember if I got that it was an OJ joke the first go around. I just thought it was weird and it was killing time, and it was just pointless.
Well, we are talking almost 2 years after the actual chase happened, so maybe a few people forgot at that point.
But... I mean, it definitely was pointless, and to me, there weren't too many missteps on the show, and I thought that was one of them. I thought that was
It's 2 years after and 6 months after the verdict.
Right.
So 6 months, who's talking about it 6 months later?
Exactly. I think Vince was still kind of somewhat delusional through the Huckster and the Nacho Man. I think Scheme Gene gave him the idea for this silly chase thing going on. But in any event,
I feel like they just, you know, they had to make up for Piper being in there somehow because they knew he couldn't go in a regular match. And this was their way, I think, of covering up by doing some wacky antics.
Yeah, I probably, but I mean, I don't even know why they. I mean, I guess they had to put Piper on the show, maybe for.
No, I don't think they had to. I think they put him in because they didn't know who else to stick with Goldust. I mean, with Hall leaving or Razor Ramon leaving, they were kind of stuck, and I think they were just trying to get the biggest name possible to still make that match a fairly big one. Because I mean, honestly, I don't think they wanted a hot shot Ahmed yet into that position. I think they wanted to let him build a little bit more. I guess you could have stuck Jake in there. But I'm not sure who else really would have played well. I thought Piper and Goldust had good interactions leading up to the show. I thought the feud was actually pretty solid.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys, who would you have put in that spot?
I like the Jake idea, actually, JR.
Yeah,
I
would Jake have worked as well, played off of Goldust as well as Piper? I thought Piper and Goldust had good chemistry because Piper is a legitimate man's man tough guy who doesn't buy into that crap, and Goldust had that to draw off and play off of. I thought the mind games were good. I mean, if they could have delivered a better brawl around the arena inside the ring... maybe this is looked back more fondly. But I think as someone that was, like, you know, sucked into this promotion big time at this point, I remember really liking that feud, and I still like it. I thought it was well built. Considering they had to throw it together in 3 weeks, I thought they did a good job getting some heat between the two guys.
Well, the build's not the problem. If they had had a single match, everything would have been fine.
If they end it in the backlot brawl, I think, you know, it probably takes a lot of the qualms away.
I agree. But Austin gets the win. A little chicanery by his manager, the million-dollar man, Teddy Biasi.
Yeah, there was a stiff million-dollar belt shot. He hits him with two. I remember he cracked him pretty good.
Yeah, he did crack him pretty good. And then he hits the sleeper, or the million-dollar dream, I guess, and gets the win. At this point, right, DiBiase's pretty much cut the fat out of the corporation.
Kid was still hanging around, and I think Tatanka is still hanging around a little bit too. So it's pretty much the three of them, I think. Right, Graham? I don't think there's anyone else left.
No, and Kid and Tatanka were about gone.
Yeah, Kid's around through April, I think.
Yeah, and then Tatanka's Didn't we look up his matches? He lasted at least another, well, a couple months probably, into May, I think. So there you go, Steve Austin. His first ever WrestleMania match, and he gets a win over Savio Vega, if you can remember it, amongst all of the, you know, there must be construction on the highway in L.A. to allow for such no traffic. I mean, you know, hi, this is Mr. Man. Yeah, I want to do a car chase. Can you block the highway for me? Thanks a lot. I mean, you know, it's like,
thanks, Pally.
So, all right, our next match. Really hurts me to do this. Hurts me bad. Still not fair. Fresh off his win over the dumpster in your house number six. Thank God I don't have to talk about any backstory here. I'll really be confused.
How'd you get this title shot? I beat the dumpster.
Yes.
Is the Greenwich Blue Blood himself, the always great Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And in his first WrestleMania match, a lot of major WrestleMania debuts here. Iconic.
Right, and I'm going to save you the stuttering. So what happened was we had a major return here and a big debut. So first let's talk about the return, and that is his opponent, the Ultimate Warrior.
Yes.
Making his first appearance since, what, late 92? Right before Survivor Series, right? When he walked out. Vince obviously feeling a little bit of pressure from WCW, feeling a little desperate, wanted to bring back some big names. He gave Warrior pretty much carte blanche here. He pimped his school, he pimped his comic book, and Destrucity, his religion, and all this other stuff. He brought him back and pretty much jacked him right up. And I remember the Raw where they announced that he was coming back. I remember it took me off guard, and at the time I was pretty excited about it because I was always a Warrior fan to that point. So. And they pretty much just teased it over the few weeks leading up to this. He didn't appear on TV at all. And I remember Lawler kept saying he heard rumors that Warrior was going to be bald and he was 400 pounds. What would he look like? And, of course, he comes back looking pretty much the same. So, Graham, what did you think of this? Did you think it was a desperation thing or do you think Warrior actually had something to offer at this point?
I think it was both. I think Warrior, had he stuck around for more than 3 months, had something to offer. And I think Vince was so freaking desperate.
Yeah.
I really think that, I would have, looking back, I would have been really interested to see where they went with Warrior had he stayed on past, June of 96. I remember reading one of the, it wasn't one of the Aftermags, it was another one of those wrestling magazines at the time. And they were even, and I'm sure they were just playing this up to sell copies, but they were even speculating, would we see HBK versus Warrior at WrestleMania 13?
Oh, jeez. I don't think he was ever going to make it that far, but I definitely think it would have been interesting if he made it into late 96 at all. But he was pretty whacked, and it's interesting how they used him, because they really didn't start to put him into the main events until right before he left. He was really working the upper mid-card, so.
And I can't even fathom how far up the card he would have gone. Obviously, I don't know whether title shots were in his future or any of that kind of nonsense, but I don't know, maybe they would have done some kind of thing with him and Jake, and maybe he would have got back at Jake for the, for the snakes and the maybe they were building up to a blow off of a feud that's what, 5 years old?
Remembered.
Guy who's worked so hard to get to this point, beat the dumpster and was ready to for his career to explode and head off into the sunset and get out into the horizon. And then this happened. 96 seconds.
Yeah.
96 friggin' seconds.
I mean,
so stupid.
I think they were trying to capture some of the honky tonk man glory from, SummerSlam 88. I mean, it made sense to have him do this kind of a match. It's just, I don't know why they decided they had to sacrifice Helmsley in this spot. Although, again, I don't know who else to use. That's the thing.
Yeah, I think with the Iron Man match on the card, it put the whole card in kind of a pinch, because you can't have too many matches.
No, and you can't eat up a lot of time either, because God forbid, what if You know, what if Goldust and Piper get pulled over for speeding and then they have to wait, you know, before they can come back?
Get arrested for speeding.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, no one's on the highway, so it doesn't even matter anyway. All the cops were around the pond, probably. We're on the arena.
Do you know what Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan have in common with the Liberty Bell?
Well, no.
One is cracked and the other is a ding dong.
Might be the best promo we ever had. Probably the only one that made any sense.
I like the one. I always enjoyed the one where he tells the kids out to smoke and then eats the fucking carton of cigarettes. that was my favorite.
Don't smoke them. Eat them.
Yeah.
Just ingest the nicotine through your saliva. What a disaster. Could you tell so far, Graham, you weren't missing much up to this point? So you're fine continuously playing the Super Nintendo version of the pay-per-view. I rather would have watched your matches than some of this so far, to be quite honest with you.
Actually, I would replay them to try to get a better match out of it.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God. And then you could have had the actual OJ Chase in the background while doing it. You know, so. Anyway, so the Ultimate Warrior gets his cheap win.
The Ultimate Warrior gets his ultimate win.
And Helmsley has to eat the pin. But actually, the juicier portion of this segment came after the match. Because if you remember, Helmsley came out with a valet.
Yes, of course. That was the luscious Sable.
Yes.
Escorted Hunter S. Helmsley. He had been bringing different valets to the ring every week. He always had a different chick with him. So,
After the match, they're in the back. But what happens is before that, is it Todd that's doing the interview?
Well, it's after. It's after the match.
I know. I'm also saying after the match.
Yeah, after the match, Todd Pangill, yes, he's interviewing a newcomer, Mark Morrow, as he introduces him as. He's interviewing this weird guy, Morrow, in the background, in the backstage. And Hunter S. Helmsley comes stomping in all angry, kind of smacking Sable around a little bit, dragging her around. And Morrow gets in his face, and they brawl a little bit. The next night at Raw, Sable would be with Helmsley again, but Morrow would come out and escort her back, and it would be a match made in heaven, as they would be united from there on out. But we'll get to that more on our next show. What did you think of Morrow jumping here, Graham? I thought it was a good move, because I was never a huge Johnny B. Badd fan until late 95, when I feel like he really started to put it together in the ring. And he had some good matches in that stretch with DDP and then Lex Luger in the spring as well.
Yeah, and I think he and DDP elevated each other from that series, even though Page never beat him once. I think Morrow jumped at the point where he was most over. And you know, maybe for him that was the best idea. Maybe that was the best opportunity, because when you're working underneath Hogan, Savage, Flair, etc., you're not really going to get to that level.
Right.
So he saw a possibility with WWF. They're looking for new talent. I'm new talent. And I've actually heard that Vince was a big Johnny B. Badd fan and initially thought he was going to get Johnny B. Badd, not realizing that that was a character owned by another company. Doing some of the research for the website now, it's funny looking back in 1991, and 1 week you'll see this guy named Mark Morrow do a stretcher job for Sid Vicious, and then 2 weeks later he's debuting as Johnny B. Badd with Teddy Long on pay-per-view.
And he... Yeah, like I said, this is another big get for them, too, during this period where they were clearly scooping up all remaining WCW guys that are being forced out with all the old-timer WWF guys going south. So, yeah, guys like we've already talked about, you know, Vader, Dustin Rhodes, Steve Austin, and we'll see a couple more coming up over the coming months. And Morrow is part of that, this influx of talent that really helped Vince solidify his upper mid-card. And allowed him to use those guys that had been in his mid card to elevate them into the main event status, you know, like Bulldog and Owen and stuff like that. So,
if you look at WCW 1993 and then look at WWF 1996, it's like a lot of the same guys. I mean, Davey Boy Smith.
Yep, definitely. So it's it was an interesting strategy Vince had, and I liked it. I thought it was good that he was taking all these underappreciated, undervalued guys that he could really meld into something. Guys that were pretty much had already gone through all the seasoning, had already built up names and reputations, and just put the final pieces together and elevated them to main event status.
But the one question that I think we all need to answer is, if Mike Adamly was doing this interview, would he have messed up Mark Farrow's name?
Mark Morrow.
Mark Morrow. Okay, so there we go. So Mr. Helmsley has to eat the pin, but does start a brand new feud, and which would burgeon through the next, what, 5 or 6 months. Actually be one of the key stable mid-card feuds throughout the year. So, all right, why don't we take a quick break, because we really get into the meat and potatoes matches next. So we'll take a quick spell, and to do that, we will talk about our good friends from WrestleChat.net, and that is because...
You know, the lawyer has a lot of bad habits, but only ones that help me survive. Don't deprive yourself of the full power. Be a survivor. Don't smoke.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. Wrestle Chat, it's where it's at.
WrestleChat.net is your home for everything pro wrestling. WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, they have all the scoop for you. They actually have a great message board. And, of course, their podcast, as you just heard, from the Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez of podcast hosts. And, of course, as you're perusing the news stories, to the right of the page, you'll see the PTB Gnome, proudly worn by Jordan Duncan. Click on it, and you'll go right to the soon-to-be 124-episode archive that is the Place to Be podcast. WrestleChat.net, it's where it's at. Now, last night, while JR and I were doing our headline show, the Event Center was not rolling, because obviously I was watching the Bruins break my heart. Tonight, the Event Center is back cranking because both our teams, the Jets and Cowboys, made their first-round picks, so no need to watch after that. And I actually have going on, I had just bought recently on the $8 off. Remember, JR, while I was in the Chateau a couple weekends ago, you and I caught that great DVD sale on WWEshop.com. Mm-hmm. $8 DVD, so I snagged a couple. One of them was the Ladder Match 2, Crash and Burn, and actually the match going on right now. November 30th, 1998, a ladder match between the Big Boss Man and Mankind.
Now, Scott, if I want to see what led to that match or what else happened in that card, is there some sort of site I could visit to check that out?
Yes, there is, but you know, most of the time I would let you know, but why don't I let our third host let you know? Graham, what site could we find what the build was leading up to this Raw?
That would be the history of WWE.com.
Really? Oh. How about that?
If only it's we had the purveyor here to tell us about it.
Exactly. Tell us about the history of WWE.com.
The history of WWE.com, now celebrating its 10-year online, is the premier online or print source for ring results dating back to the 1960s. Featuring both WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and ECW, as well as WCW and Jim Crockett Promotions. Find ring results, promotional ads, photos, and a whole crap load more at thehistoryofwwe.com.
And there's many shows on there that Scott and I are going to review, not only in print form, but also on podcast form. And to check us out, you can find us on Stitcher.com. You can download that app right to your iPhone, right to your iPad. You can listen supposedly to the last 10 episodes, but as of right now, I believe it's usually the last one streaming on there. Don't want to download it, aren't able to download it. You can just stream it right off the internet. You can also do that from iTunes as well if you have that app on your phone or your iPad, or you just have iTunes on your computer. So check us out in both those places. Also check us out at the Bigelow34.proboards.com message board. I created a whole new forum on there just for the podcast. I'm going to have separate threads for every episode. We're going to have threads for all your feedback. So please come visit us there. Scott and I also posted our One Night Stand 2007 review early this morning, so you can check that out as well. I also need to give a shout-out to our good buddy Jay Wimette. I talk about him every episode because I think it's an important cause that we talk about him. He's suffering from a terrible leg disease called lymphedema, and that is a very serious issue he's going through. It is not fun. It is not pretty, and Jay needs all our support, all our help. He has the most impressive catalog and cachet of videos, VHS, DVDs of our wrestling, all promotions. He puts mine to shame, and I have been stacked in my basement ready to be moved. I'm going to have my buddy Andy Flanagan come over. I think the two of us, as hulking and strong as we are going to struggle to lift these things. But Jay has a collection that puts that to shame. So he sells those things for $1 a piece. Graham, if you need them for any of your collection, Scott, $1 a piece. He'll give you any DVD of any show you want out of his collection. He's got a website that we have posted up. And we're also going to work with him to see if we can set up some sort of trivia contest to give some of his DVDs away. So please support him, Jay Wimette. He is a part of our Place to Be Podcast Nation. You can find him on that site as well. Now, fellas, I also had one other quick plug-in story I wanted to tell you about. I recently was looking for a new workout, or my wife and I are moving, Graham. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, and had to sever my gym membership because it's a different city. I just don't think I'll be going with the newborn and all that. So I was looking for something I could do at home. So I heard an interview by Diamond Dallas Page, figured I'd check out his yoga program, so the wife and I ordered it. Now we're 3 days into it. Already feel great. It's already a tremendous workout. Yoga for real, guys. We did the first true workout Tuesday night, and I'm telling you, I was sweating my balls off doing this thing. I was just pouring sweat. I couldn't believe it. But the kicker of all this is the tremendous customer service. Sunday night, I'm sitting at home, and I get a call on my cell phone from a blocked number. I answer it. It's Diamond Dallas Page. He's calling me to see if I had used the program yet, if I liked it, what my goals were, and he tried to help me, give me some tips. He wasn't looking to sell me anything else. He just wanted to talk for a few minutes and see what I thought of the program so far. So really excellent customer service. I thought that was really cool, and he definitely won me over as a proponent and something I'm going to plug and push on this show week after week. And actually, we're hoping something's in the work. We'll be able to have Mr. Page on to talk to us about it as well. So that is the DDP Yoga for Real, guys. If anyone's looking for a cool workout, it's only 20 to 30 minutes right in your living room. And it definitely, you know, I'm in pretty good cardio shape, and this thing kicked my ass. So check that out. And of course, check out all the other sites and things we mentioned here tonight.
I feel like as we progress, the music goes longer than Lee Marshall's updates.
I'm going to start mixing some other songs in.
And, Graham, did Lee Marshall ever do a Nitro party from your house?
Yes. No. Sadly, he did not. Although, I think if Lee Marshall showed up at my house and knocked on the door, I don't think I would open the door.
Let's be honest. He did those from Bischoff's office in the arena. I mean, for God's sake.
If Kimberly and Fire and Spice and all of them showed up, I'd let them in. I wouldn't let in Lee Marshall.
Plus, we're going to have Graham Cracker Fed Weasel on the menu.
What a putz. All right. Let's move on now to the kind of the meat and potatoes matches of this show. Really, the matches that define this pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Pumped up to no end since the Royal Rumble, we finally have the war in the ring between the Dead Man and Big Daddy Cool. The Undertaker versus Diesel. JR, you must have been so pumped up for this match.
Oh, I was. This is an early dream match before there were a lot of dream matches. We had Hogan, Flair, and a couple other ones. But to me, this really was a dream match. Diesel being back to being the ass-kicking beast. And something we hadn't really seen. We hadn't really seen him feud or even cross paths with the Undertaker, really, since he debuted. So to me, it was a unique match. It was one that really made sense. And this is the first time in a long time, if not ever, that Undertaker really brings his working boots, and we see him deliver a match that I think surprised a lot of people. I think that, you know, the Haas fans and the character fans were excited for this, but as far as the in-ring work rate perspective goes, I don't think people were expecting much from this at all. But I thought the build was great. We saw it start at the Rumble, continued in your house when Taker came up through the ring and cost Diesel the title match. They kept playing mind games in the weeks leading up to the show. March 18th was probably the highlight. Diesel's taking on Barry Horowitz. Paul Bearer, who had been beaten down by Diesel the week before, wheeled the casket to ringside. Diesel would open the casket only to find a replica of himself laying there. And he was freaked out a little bit, but he tried to lay cool. And I thought this was really neat. I like the way they did that with the fake Diesel laying in the casket. Of course, this also led to one of our favorite inside joke quotes. I ain't afraid of the dark, that Diesel said.
yeah.
So that was always one of our favorite, me and Andrew's favorite inside line. Also the infamous, when Diesel's walking to the ring, he says, "I'm the shit, I'm telling you," as he's getting in the ring. One of his classic little lines there.
Yes.
You can tell I'm excited about this match. I'm all fired up.
Yes, exactly. And I like the fact that, I tell you, that Diesel in the casket was pretty good. I don't know if it was wax or whatever the hell it was or whatever the hell, however they pulled that off, but looked pretty much like him.
Mm.
It was pretty good. As was this match. Oh, Graham, you have something to say. Go ahead.
I did?
Oh, it's not like you did. Sorry.
Oh, I can. Talk.
Talk.
I'm sorry.
Modib.
We're telling you to talk. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. It was rare at this point for me to get honestly psyched about an Undertaker pay-per-view match or a Diesel pay-per-view match. And I was psyched about this match. I think they did a fantastic job building it. Diesel was red hot. I mean, he had just dropped the belt after holding it for a year. And then Undertaker obviously never loses. So where do you go with this? So I thought when I said earlier in the show that Yoko Vader was made for WrestleMania, this match was also made for WrestleMania.
Without a doubt.
Absolutely. And I tell you, Diesel brought his working boots. I agree with you, JR. Taker was Taker, and he was going to bring about what he could. But kudos to the dead man to Big Daddy Cool for really, really making this match special. He could have laid a fart bomb here and made this a colossal piece of crap, and he didn't.
No, he busts his ass. They both do. And, yeah, it's one of those matches you don't expect it to be as good as it was. And they go 16 minutes, and they just beat the crap out of each other. A lot of good power moves, a lot of good offense. I just really dug this match. I remember, speaking of Andrew, that this was always one of his favorite matches, too. I remember him talking about. And these two just deliver, and it really was a dream match. I like that the feud ends here. They had a two-month feud, blow it off with a huge match. Taker wins clean with the tombstone. That's it.
Graham?
If Nash wasn't jumping, they could have had a whole lot more money made off that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, Nash was just so great at this point, and the heel character he had going. He finally had that swagger back, and, you know, it only gets even better next month. So, they really lost out. You know, I think Razor Ramon had, as over as he still was, had kind of hit his peak and kind of hit his usefulness wall. So I don't think losing him would have been as a big deal, but losing both of these guys, specifically Nash at this point, was really a death blow. But we'll get into that more in our next show.
I mean, it's a huge hole in the mid-card, but Diesel showed that...
I don't do any tricks.
I thought you brought out the catering. I'm sure he was pissed. Again, a great match. Taker hits the tombstone. Crowd was pretty hot for this, and you know we always know how notoriously bad California crowds are, but they were pretty good for this match. And Taker hits the tombstone and ups his WrestleMania record to 5-0, which is minute at this point.
Yeah, not really talked about. They weren't really. I don't even know if they mentioned it at all. I mean, they may have just said it off.
Yeah, you
know, offhand, but
yeah. At this point, I don't even think they realized that. He never lose. They probably at this point were even realizing that they kept booking him to win. I don't think it even entered their minds probably until for another 3 or 4 years down the road, most likely. So, all right. So Diesel takes the loss, but definitely brings the working boots in what is the surprise match of the night. All right. Let's finally put to bed this disaster.
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
Before you put that disaster to bed, you have to put this disaster to bed. On March 6, 1996, in Macon, Georgia, Hacksaw Jim Duggan teamed with Sergeant Craig Pittman, Marcus Alexander Bagwell, and Scotty Riggs. And, yeah, they lost to Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Kevin Sullivan, and Loch Ness.
Remember? Wow, big shock.
Who else does? On March 11th in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, during Monday Nitro, the Giant beat Jim Duggan. Well, yeah, I saw that coming. On March 13th in Dalton, Georgia, Jim Duggan beat Disco Inferno and then lost to the Giant. on March 24th in Tupelo, Mississippi at WCW Uncensored 1996. Hacksaw Jim Duggan wanted to get on the pay-per-view, but they didn't want him on the pay-per-view, and instead they put him on the main event on TBS, and he beat Big Bubba. That's about it. I might have one more. Hold on. On March 27th in Rome, Georgia, WCW Saturday Night Taping, and he beat Dave Taylor. And that is March 1996 in the history of Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yeah, one of the smartest things Eric Bischoff ever did was leave him off pay-per-view. Good job, EZE. I applaud you. All right. Let's go on to something that's just as equally bad as the month of March for Jim Duggan, and that is the end of this match. Finally, after blocking the route whatever in the L.A. freeway for for 5 hours, what it seemed like, pulling into the Arrowhead Pond was indeed the gold Cadillac and the the gold Cadillac and the plaid Cadillac. You know what? Maybe I would not have got as mad if it was a plaid Cadillac. Imagine plaid Cadillac driving up and down the L.A. freeways. That would have been probably nothing different to them, but certainly better than a white Bronco. Anyway, they pull in, and we finish off this redonkulous match, which had a promise. And as much as I'm slamming this this whole debacle, JR, I'm not disagreeing with you that the build to this
is very
good.
I'm not
going
to be here, Terry, because I'm not booked. That's an old rule I've had for a long time.
Where does this guy get off mouthing off to Terry Funk anyway? I would have just barbed wired him in the face. I mean, really.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
And then back him over with your, truck. I mean, really.
I'm sorry, Dennis.
You talk like Terry Funk for 2 hours.
I like that you have him apologizing to fucking Dennis Stamp.
I know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hurt your feelings, Dennis. Oh, I'm so sorry. What can I do to ever make it up to you?
You son of a bitch.
Because I'm not involved.
You egg-sucking dog.
I want you to come, please.
Well,
I'm asking you to please come, all right?
I already have other arrangements, and don't take it personally, because I used to be in the dressing room, and I used to see the old guys, and that's where I am now. I used to see the old guys that came in the dressing room that come around, and they looked like old dogs, just hoping somebody would recognize them. Here, Spot.
Why don't you come and see us?
I really have to be involved, and I'm not.
I want you to be there.
You know, and I did ask you in April if I could referee some matches on the card, which would have been...
You're refereeing tonight,
which would have been...
You're refereeing tonight.
But I'm not on the card. I'm not booked.
You want to referee me and Brett? Referee me and Brett.
I already have
what
arrangements in it. Terry,
I want you to referee me and Brett.
I'm just. I guess. Okay. So what happened?
I'm
guess you just.
900 miles an hour.
I guess it was just
doing.
So far down. I guess you just didn't hear me or something when I asked you before.
I don't.
Or didn't
Dennis,
think about
I
it.
I didn't even know about it. But I want you to. I want you to.
I appreciate that.
Why is a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion begging this egg-sucking dog to referee his match? And what are his other arrangements? He's going to Aunt Petunia's barbecue?
I think we need to have a Place to Be podcast contest. The best one to come up with what Dennis Stamp's other arrangements were, they won a prize. I need to know what these other arrangements were that he had planned.
Oh, God. Aunt Petunia's barbecue. Oh, Terry Funk.
Going to dinner at the Sizzler, Terry. I'm sorry, we have other arrangements. I'm not involved.
Terry, it's free peel and eat shrimp tonight, damn it.
I'm booked. I got this pink polo shirt on. I can't referee in this.
Terry, I got a ref shirt in the trunk. Come on, Dennis. I got a ref shirt in the trunk. Oh, jeez. Talk to my friend Mo Adib. Come ref the match. God. I think the fans would rather hear us do this than watch the rest of the Piper Goldust match. Yeah. To be honest with you.
I would rather do this than watch the rest of it.
All right. Anyway, so they get back in the ring. They get out of their cars. They go up the ramp, and they wrestle for a little bit. Piper, Goldust kisses Piper, right? And then Piper snaps and then rips off his clothes and he's got on
nonchalantly working it. And Goldust kisses Piper and then he rips his clothes off. He's got lingerie
on. His clothes off.
Piper runs him off and, you know, normal match.
Yeah, normal. Whatever. Let's move on. It was Dennis Stamp refereeing this. Terry, I'm not wearing a pink shirt with Goldust in the ring. I can't spill anything on Aunt Petunia's. Whatever.
Heirloom.
I got an interview. Terry, I have arrangements. I have an interview with Graham Cawthon.
Yes.
I have time to referee your match,
if
Terry.
If we could ever land a Dennis Stamp interview, I'd be good for life.
What's he doing now?
What was he doing then? He's still bouncing on his fucking trampoline.
Jesus.
It's been 21 years between matches, but you never know when that phone call is going to come.
Hey, Spot, come here. Is that his new nickname, Spot? Come here, Spot. Spot Stamp, come here.
I'm surprised that, like, WCW or anyone didn't try and capitalize that his little cameo and be out on the mat and bring him in for a run or something stupid. Or even, like, Heyman or something.
Oh, my God. Dennis Stamp in WCW. ECW. That would be pretty funny.
All right. So coming off the Backlot Brawl, which I thought was very good, and then the stupid driving segment. Yeah, these guys go in the ring and they do this little comedy. They pretty much went for a serious brawl and then into a comedy segment. So, I thought this part devalued Goldust just a little bit. He's your IC champion, and I know it's funny to have him run around in women's clothing, but I thought it was probably a step too far. I thought the kiss was fine. I think they could have ended it with after that. Piper gets mad, socks him in the face, and pins him or something. I don't think, I don't know. This kind of made, I guess Goldust was meant to look like a bitch anyway, but.
Try to keep a straight face so I say, yeah, well, the kiss was fine.
I thought it was, you know.
Oh, yeah. So Graham, how was that interview with Dennis Stamp? Because you really, let's just admit it, you were the other arrangement. Come on.
Well, I'll tell you, I thought I had some really good questions, but all he wanted to do was jump on his trampoline.
Yes. Well, he doesn't do tricks, though.
Yeah, and sign the pink polo shirt. Come on, Dennis, I have a ref shirt in the back of the truck. Well, all right. Enough of this. Time to get down to the nitty-gritty, the business at hand. The reason this pay-per-view is going on, and the match everyone has been waiting for.
And goodbye to me tonight.
Start the fire, buddy! Stranger!
We strictly do 80s Joel music, sir.
And why you needed me to.
King Billy Joel 2-Up sucks!
Hey, listen, motherfucker, we always sing 80s Joel! So take your skate cooker wife and get the fuck out of here!
So Dennis Stamp was doing keyboards. That was the other arrangement.
Yes.
He was doing keyboards that night, yes. Finally, we get to our main event. For the World Wrestling Federation Championship, 60 minutes. The Hitman, Bret Hart, and the winner for the second year in a row of the Royal Rumble, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
And there must be a winner.
Yes. Said right out of the horse's mouth, or the hot rod's mouth, at In Your House number 6. There must be a winner. And this is the first ever televised Iron Man match. In WWF history, and the first 60-minute Iron Man match of any kind on television. You remember the two 30-minute Iron Man matches that occurred a few years earlier, one between Rick Rude and Ricky Steamboat, the other between Rick Rude and Dustin Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
JR, what were your thoughts? How are you feeling as a fan knowing that you're actually going to have to watch a 60-minute match?
All right, well, a couple of things. First, I just mentioned as well, Gorilla Monsoon makes his return here as the president. No longer interim now. He's officially the president. He comes out before the match. Heading in, I was actually really excited for this. I thought it was cool. It was a neat idea. I remember, you know, being a little antsy to settle in for an hour for this match. But, you know, if there's any two guys at the time that could do it, I knew these two would. And they were really was built up so well. They had those video packages where Sean was with Jose Lothario down in San Antonio working out, kind of doing more of like the Lucha style. And you had Brett, you know, roughing it up, and Brett's always joked about it. He says it in his book, and I think on the DVD, it kind of made him look like an old fool. He's like getting schooled by Stu, and then he's running on ice, and it was so slippery. He was like slowly jogging. So he's kind of saying it made him look a little goofy. But, you know, I thought the build was excellent. It was more of that legitimate sports build. You had these two guys that had respect for each other professionally, but you could feel a little bit of that underlying tension between these two already at this point. So that was there. And I was excited for it. Graham, let me ask you this. Actually, I have two questions I want to ask, and I'll pose this to both of you. Do you think it hurt Sean to have Jose Lothario with him? Did it make him look stupid to have this old guy as his manager?
I don't think so.
No?
I had never heard of Jose Lothario.
I don't think anyone had, honestly.
I didn't hear him. I never heard of him.
But I don't think it did, because it played perfectly into the boyhood dream storyline that they had going.
But you don't think it made him look lame?
No.
Okay. I'm just saying, he's like supposed to be this like chick man at sex symbol guy, and he's got like this fucking 70-year-old Mexican walking behind him all the time.
In fact, it kind of rubbed off kind of a little bit of a Rocky vibe.
True.
A little bit of a you know, this is the fight that I'm preparing for, and here's my trainer, and you know, I'm just busting my ass. I'm gonna run up these rafters while Brett can even run down the block.
Do you think it should have ended here though, Jose? Because he stays with him for the year.
No, I was fine with it. I mean, I was not a huge Sean fan after the title change, just because I didn't buy into the little fake street teases and stuff.
Yep.
But I think Jose being there maybe added a little bit of credibility. Not. I mean, we know who Sean is, and Sean's a great worker, and blah blah blah. But I think it kind of ties back into that almost a Rocky vibe of the trainer and the champion.
And now Sean was in phenomenal shape for this match. He's talked about that before. He focused solely on cardio so he wouldn't get blown up. And he was just – and if you see those training videos, the stuff he's doing, and his body was just ripped. So ready going into this. Now, Scott, I'll start with you on this other question I have.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get Graham's take. Do you think this match would have been more effective if it wasn't an Iron Man and just went an hour to that finish? Do you think it would have been more – because knowing that it's going an hour, you're looking at the clock, and especially in a match like this where there weren't any falls, you're waiting for the clock. Whereas if it was just going an hour and you were more on the edge of your seat because you knew the match could end at any time as opposed to knowing you had that set period.
Yeah, I kind of like that theory. I think everyone was like, wow, they've been wrestling 45 minutes. Nobody's gotten pinned yet.
Right.
Oh, for God's sakes. Whereas instead, you're just like, you know, at any minute, my God, we're at 40 minutes. My God, we're at 45 minutes. No one – I mean, I think it would have been a better testament to – plus the last – and again, they kind of stick it to Brett for no real reason. By the 55-minute mark, now it's like, oh, all Brett's got to do is – you know, because then the whole there must be a winner is forgotten at this point. So they spend the last 5 minutes saying, ah, Brett's just got to run out the clock. Just run out the clock and he wins. And I hated that. I thought that sucked. I didn't like the way that they kind of made Brett out to be like this – you know, I'm just going to stall and kind of rag the puck, if you will, in using NHL terms. I've never thought of that, but I think you're right. I think it would have been better to just have these two wrestle and not worry about stipping it and just let the two go in there and go at each other.
Right.
What do you think of that, Graham?
I completely agree. I mean, that it would have had a lot more of a big fight Ring of Honor match.
Mm-hmm.
Had they taken that stipulation away and just had them go 59 minutes or an hour, or you know, maybe stipulate that there is no time limit, so then you don't even have to worry about the 60 minute, because traditionally, even though you never reach that mark in the WWF, there is a 60 minute time limit. Yeah, I think that would have been phenomenal. With the Iron Man stipulation, you Brent and Sean at this point didn't lose. I mean, you didn't see them lose on TV. You rarely saw them lose on pay-per-view. So I don't know if it was that we didn't have any falls to simply protect them.
Oh, that was definitely part of it, I think.
Right, right.
Mm.
And then simply have the when you've got the overtime situation, but you also have it as being mildly controversial. Like Brett saying, well, the match is over. Screw you guys. I'm going home. So I don't know if they booked themselves into a corner by having to protect these guys to the point where they can't have any falls. But if you look at other Iron Man matches, and even Iron Man matches involving tag teams, Smoky Mountain was doing this a year or two beforehand with the Rock and Roll Express and the Heavenly Bodies. They would go out, almost every night and do 60-minute matches and have multiple falls. And I think having multiple falls adds more intrigue to the match. Mm-hmm. You can tell different stories. It gives you more to work with. Whereas when you go into it and you know you're just going to have that one fall, why have the Iron Man stipulation at all?
Right. Now, the only reason, I guess, if you're going to have the stipulation is to not... I mean, if you started this match that early in the show without that stipulation, then flags are going to go up immediately. So I guess this is the only downside to having it start that early. You know, kayfabe-wise, you're basically giving away that it's going to go an hour. Because it's not like they had any other matches they could tack on or lop off. Mm. So, mm-hmm. But I think it would have added to the drama quite a bit. I think having that hour deadline really sucked a little bit of the heat out of it. Because I think the match starts hot and then really slows down in the middle quite a bit. And I think the psychology is fine. I think what they do is fine. Technically, it's fine. But it does get a little bland until probably like the last 10 minutes or so.
If they had some falls in between, or if they had, you know, maybe Sean suffers a knee injury mm-hmm. halfway through, or, you know, something where there is a disadvantage, you know, someone's down a fall or someone's down three falls, I think that if you change the story up, it would have added more intrigue to the match. Whereas what we got, like I said earlier, I don't know if it really necessitated having the Iron Man stipulation.
And it's a match that both guys should be proud of, like that they were able to put this together. And we're not trying to take away that part of it. I'm never going to say it's a bad match. I just don't think it's a great match.
I think we're also spoiled by the fact that future Iron Man matches.
No, but even at the time, I felt this way.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with it at the time.
I mean, I can't say I've ever gone back and maybe once I've rewatched it. This is not a match. To me, that's a big part of how great a match was. Is it rewatchable? I'm not saying you're going to get sucked in again, but was this match rewatchable to me? No, I don't ever have a desire to go back and watch this match.
I think I've watched this match exactly three times. That night and the two times we watched them for our written reviews. And I agree with you. And it always pisses me off when they stick it on a DVD because... you know, you're eating up half the space. For instance, on the history of the WWE Championship DVD, you could have put at least, you know, three more good title matches on that second disc. Instead, you've got like five matches, and one of them is this one that eats up, you know.
It's a match that's almost better in highlight form than actual. Remember that? What's that one? Was that on the WrestleMania 20 DVD where they have the Ric Flair does the countdown of the greatest Mania matches, and they have that awesome video package for this?
Yes.
With the Bittersweet Symphony playing and everything. Like, I thought that was a tremendous video package, and it gets you want to watch a match, and then you actually watch it, and you're like, oh, so I'd rather watch a video package. But
I think, the worst spell is right after Sean super kicks the timekeeper until the last 5 minutes. And I think he super kicks him, what, maybe... I don't know, 22 minutes in, something like that.
I mean, the end is very good. It's very frenetic. I like what they did and the tease of the sharpshooter and everything. I thought it was very well done.
I was going to ask, did you guys happen to catch Showdown in the Sun during WrestleMania weekend, Ring of Honor shows?
I've seen part of it.
You and I watched part of it.
Yeah, they've been airing it on Ring of Honor TV the last couple of weeks.
Have you seen the Kevin Steen Generico match?
Yeah, didn't we watch that one, Scott?
Yeah, is that the one where... Is that the one where that other guy comes in the ring and hits him with something?
Jimmy
Jacobs.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice that Steen super kicked the guy at ringside in the same exact spot?
No, that's funny.
No, I didn't notice that, actually.
Yes. I remember watching that going, holy crap, apparently someone in this match is a huge fan of that match.
Or just that one spot.
Because Kevin Steen doesn't look like a guy that...
Sorry, I had to get that in at least once.
Don't play that one. Play Making Some Noise.
You want to make some noise? Well, that was from, what, 93, right? They played that?
That was right after he won the belt.
Yeah.
That's funny. What I was saying was, Graham, I don't think Kevin Steen could go 60 minutes, to be honest with you.
No.
So, no. So anyway, just for those that may not know, what happens is Sean goes for a move off the top rope with about 45 seconds left. Brett steps back. Sean falls on his butt. And with 37 seconds left, Brett finally hooks in the sharpshooter.
Mm-hmm.
And as best as usual, unlike a future wrestling superstar's crappy sharpshooter, Brett hooks this thing in pretty good. He's got it ratcheted pretty good. He's got him bent it like a half moon. And Sean's fighting and fighting and fighting, and he keeps nodding, no, no. He literally nods his head no for about 12 straight seconds. Finally, the buzzer goes off. Brett's like, all right, whatever. He didn't pin me. Too bad. I'm done. Grabs his belt. He's about three quarters up the ramp, and then the Big G walks up the stairs, President Gorilla, chats with Earl and chats with the Fink. And we now remember the Hot Rod's infamous words at In Your House number – well, no, I keep saying In Your House.
He said on Raw.
Yeah, so two weeks later on Raw, the infamous, there must be a winner. So Fink announces that they go to sudden death. Brett's pissed and has him ring the bell and just starts – I mean, he starts – these shots probably stiffer than anything in the first – he is just kicking – wailing Sean in the back with it with kicks. I mean, he's kicking him hard.
Well, I mean, Brett kind of gets hosed here too, because you know the match ended with him the sharpshooter. He should have been able to get back in that position. I mean, it's not his fault. They made him break it by ringing the bell. I mean, it was stupid.
Yeah,
it's not really fair. If they're going to go overtime, why not just announce it during the match? Hey, okay, we're now going overtime. Like the fact that they stopped to let Sean recover. Like you can just kind of see why Brett would have been pissed character wise.
Yes, I'm sure he was. Obviously, he was pissed for other reasons, but although he says on the they say on the DVD that he, you know, but you know how Sean is. Sean's history is Sean's himself. So anyway, they keep brawling. Sean hits the first super kick. Brett kicks out,
mm-hmm.
and then they brawl a little bit longer. And then Sean super kicks him a second time. Gets the three count, and we have a new World Wrestling Federation champion. In 61 minutes and 53 seconds, JR, do you have the...
No, I can pull it up, though. I was going to say it myself.
Oh, okay.
I can pull
all right,
it up.
Go ahead. Go ahead. You can say it. If you want to quote your favorite, one of your favorite play-by-play guys of all time.
The boyhood dream has become a reality.
Yes. It has come true for Shawn Michaels. Shawn is your new World Wrestling Federation champion. Graham, you were not happy about this.
Well, I'm kind of like you. You know, if it was going to go into overtime, why stop the match? Mm-hmm. I thought Sean was a phenomenal worker. I think Sean could get a good match out of everyone. I was not a huge fan of the post-match antics that he was known to do on Raw and Superstars and the like. I don't care about seeing your ass, dude. But yeah, I think what they did with Brett immediately after this, where, and I don't know if you guys recall or not, but the camera caught him backstage, and he was like, no, I'm not talking, get on my face. And he gets his bag, and he gets in his car, and he drives off. And then they talk to him a few weeks later during the European tour, and he's in Germany, and he's just saying, you know, I basically got screwed, and I don't know what I'm gonna do now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Sean was the better man that night. I thought, you know, I had him in the sharpshooter, the match was over, and then they changed the rules on me. So I gotta go think. And I thought that was fantastic. And I thought that it completely let the door open for Brett to come back and then do a rematch for the title and do huge numbers and be big business. And I would totally have purchased that pay-per-view.
And it inadvertently led really to one of the greatest storylines of all time upon his return.
Yes, yes. And as a result, that rematch was not exactly what I had hoped either. And it ended up being one of the biggest matches in wrestling history.
And what's funny is you know, staying in the storyline kayfabe thing, Sean never really gets his, or Brett really never gets his rematch. If you think about it,
nope.
He was due it. He could have said it too, knowing Brett. You know how Brett takes the kayfabe seriously. Now, of course, the infamous urban legend, which Sean debunks on the Greatest Rivalries DVD, is that he doesn't tell Earl to tell Brett to get the fuck out of my ring. That's a very infamous. and it's been said a lot of years that Sean did tell Earl to tell Brett to get the fuck out of my ring. They mentioned that on the Greatest Rivalries DVD, and apparently Brett says Sean says, no, I don't think I said that. But I got to be – you know, guys, Brett is – they're both marks for themselves. You know, they're both mocks for themselves. But I'm sorry. Brett just is more believable to me. Sean could never say – it's just the way Sean talks.
I think it's believable. So that I don't think Sean cared ever enough to remember this, or he was so coked out of his mind he just doesn't remember half the stuff.
Yeah. I like plan B.
Yeah, whereas Brett – you know, meticulously kept notes and audio journals and diaries and all this other shit. So he comes off more believable because historically he's usually more credible. But it's not that Sean is lying per se, at least nowadays. I mean, back then he was, but nowadays he's not really lying per se because it's more likely he really just doesn't fucking remember or doesn't care enough to remember. He's just moved on. I think that's a big difference between the two. I think when you watch that DVD, it's basically Brett saying, you did this bad. You were wrong with doing this. You were an asshole doing this. And Sean's like, oh, yeah, I was. I guess so. It was kind of like,
yeah.
It was like cathartic for Brett to sit there and get it all off his chest. And Sean basically just sat there like a punching bag and took it for the most of the show.
The boyhood dream has come true for Shawn Michaels.
Vince doesn't have many great lines in his. In fact, I kind of bust his chops throughout his. Almost what 6-year career as a play-by-play guy, but that line he hit, I don't even think Gorilla might have played that one off well.
No, it was well done.
It was well done. It's one of Sean, his best moments. Now, there's a question I wanted to ask you earlier in the show, JR, and Graham. I'd like your input on this too. We talked about Lawler being the color commentator.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, JR, when we were talking about when we did the '96 Rumble, talked about Perfect as the color guy, and how he was like in that Jesse role. Do you think you would have enjoyed the match more if Perfect was doing color here?
Yes.
Probably, yeah. But I didn't think Lawler was actually that bad in this match. But, I mean, he's been worse. But, yeah, I think Perfect probably would have added more credibility. I think even if you had Jim Ross with the 3M in a booth, it would have also added some credibility, too.
Okay. Graham, you agree?
I agree, if only because Perfect had long histories with both guys.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. Had known both guys for a very long time. And if you can't get Jim Ross in there, I think he would have been the next best thing.
Okay, so there you go.
Well, let me just ask you this quickly, Graham. Heading into this, was this a foregone conclusion in your mind that Sean was winning this match?
I think, well, in retrospect, it should have been. And I think even at that point, I kind of saw it as, wow, you know, he could really do it. And he's never been champion before. Because I think in this era, we kind of lose sight that there was a time in which, you know, whenever the new guy got the belt at WrestleMania, that was kind of the new era.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't had a new era in a long time. I remember this was a big deal. Austin was a big deal. And I think Sean, I criticized Sean earlier saying I didn't really like the dancing around and stuff. But they did a fantastic job pulling me in to care about Sean.
Mm-hmm.
With the Owen kick in the head, the using the nine guys in Syracuse to make it seem as though Sean's career might be over, the interview with Todd Pettengill in which he didn't want to talk about his career being over, and then coming back at the Rumble. I think that was a fantastic build. So that sucked me in. It may have been foregone, but it wasn't so much that I wouldn't have dropped the money for the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. If I could.
Yeah, I think it was just enough doubt that came in from the year before where Sean didn't win the big one, but he was in the title match. And Brett having just won the title back pretty recently. I mean, I think I was fairly certain Sean was winning, but when they went to the overtime and all that, like, I don't know. It just wouldn't have surprised me if Brett had won and kept the title. So
I think comparison, taking the title out of it, I think a fair comparison would have been Cena Rock.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, most likely. I pretty much thought that Sean was going to win this match, too. I don't know how, but...
And it clearly kicks off a new era. You can clearly see that. So let's wrap up talking about the show, though. We'll get to the feedback here. But, Graham, what do you kind of grade the show as overall, looking at as a total package?
I would do. I think the Iron Man took away some opportunities for some other guys and some other matches. I'll go B minus.
I think it's a fair grade. I always enjoyed the show, but you know, I'm a big fan of 1996 in general. I really like Taker Diesel. I like the Backlot Brawl. I like the Austin Vega match. I like the open. Actually, I like the whole card, honestly. Just the main event was just kind of bland, not something I'd want to go back and rewatch. I think that knocks it down a little bit. But I'd say it's a middle of the road on Mania. But I like that there was no celebrities. I like that they focused very heavily outside of Piper Goldust. It was all very heavily on in-ring action, on the athleticism, the competitors, more of a sports build. They didn't have a lot of ancillary backstage things. And I really thought they did a nice job putting the focus back in the ring in the show.
I agree, and I think the mid card is very entertaining too. JR, sans the Goldust Piper nonsense. You know, you're talking about two future studs of this business, both. I mean, you know, in matches that are forgettable. One because you know you're putting over a complete lunatic, and the other because no one's paying attention to it because you're seeing, you know, two guys driving on a road. So, but I think the undercard does get forgotten here. Even the six-man tag, I think, is very good. So,
all right, so. Just fire up the feedback. I'll start it off here. Scott, you have it pulled up in the brand new home of the feedback here?
I do, yes, okay. The home of the feedback, bigelow34.proboards.com.
And everyone delivered, and remember, most of you did, but always remember, please put your real name so we don't have to read the screen name. So let's start off with our buddy Derek Cornett. I'd rather watch Sting versus Flair for 45 minutes than this rest fest. It's a historic match, but I think it was way overhyped and doesn't match up to the NWA 60-minute world title match. In my opinion, it isn't in the top 10 Mania matches.
Okay. Corey Ferreira. So here we are, WrestleMania, the biggest show of the year. Show opens with Camp Cornette, consisting of Bulldog, Owen Hart, and Vader, taking on Ahmed Johnson, Jake Roberts, and Yokozuna. The match is not the best Mania opener ever, but it's a pretty good little tag match, seeing Camp Cornette get the win and further cementing them as the main heel group in the WWF. Next up, Steve Austin takes on Savio Vega. Match is pretty good from two very good workers. Austin picks up the win here. I don't think this Austin fellow is going to go far in the WWF. I don't know. The Ultimate Warrior takes on young Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and while Warrior squashed poor Mr. Helmsley in the match, all us fans of him weep at whenever it is shown. Yes, I know. Nonetheless, Warrior's return was a big deal for the WWF at the time, getting a huge star from their peak a few years prior to come back into the company. Undertaker and Diesel finally come to blows after months of interfering in matches. The match is good, not a five-star classic by any means, but it's good for the era it is in and the level of work rate these two were known for at the time. The Hot Rod Roddy Piper makes his in-ring return for the first time since WrestleMania 8 to take on Goldust in the Hollywood Backlot Brawl. It is not a good match in terms of in-ring action, but it is a pretty entertaining match for the brawl it is. The parody they did of the OJ Bronco chase is quite hilarious, but shows how dated this show is. Nonetheless, a very entertaining match. Now, main event time. WWF champion Bret Hart takes on Shawn Michaels. I'm sure the prospect of seeing an hour-long wrestling match was different for a lot of the WWF audience at the time and more suited for the smart fans at the time who traded tapes and whatnot. But the match is a classic, in my opinion, and for the longest time is the best match in WrestleMania history. Though the match does have its bad parts, I'm sure not a lot of people are fans of the long rest holds the two do. But still a great main event with the now iconic ending with McMahon going, the boyhood dream has come true for Shawn Michaels. Overall, a good Mania, especially after the clusterfuck Mania 11 was the year before. And as Corey Ferrer always does, he puts down Meltzer's grades. First match, 2.5. Austin Vega, 2. Warrior Helmsley, dud. Taker Diesel, 2.25. Piper Goldust, no rating. And Shawn Brett, 4.25.
Mr. Jason Greenhouse, I've watched the Iron Man match probably 10 times. Wow, good for you. Along with Savage Steamboat from WrestleMania 3 and a few other matches, this match should be shown to the current roster on how to work a match. It's so well put together. Both men were in tip-top shape and busted their ass from start to finish. One of the most memorable still shots in company's history happens after this match, Shawn on his knees staring at the world title in his hands. The Hollywood Backlot Brawl was a little cheesy, but holy crap, Hot Rod and Goldie beat the living hell out of each other. Goldust gets into detail about this match in his book. Everything that happened prior to them was coming into the arena was pre-taped. Actually, taped a few days prior to Mania. Well, there you go, Graham. The WrestleMania debut of Steve Austin, the feud that he and Savio Vega had was real good. Ugh, the return of the Warrior. I had a feeling that when he made his return, it wouldn't last. You'd think that Hunter and Steph ever got in a fight, and Steph throws a well-at-least-heading job to the Warrior WrestleMania line at him. Taker was the best Mania match to date. Has his best Mania match to date. Him and Diesel had a solid match. Overall, strange WrestleMania. I've never been a fan of LA crowds. It's almost like they need flashing applause or boo signs to prompt them. But they do get witness to one of the best matches of wrestling history, and we can't take that away from them.
Okay. Dennis Nunez. First thing I want to mention is how fucking dead that pond crowd was. Okay. They barely reacted to anything and practically sat on their hands for most of the night. Friggin' latte drinkers. Quotes my brother. That's what he thinks, too. Sean's quest for the title is what made me a wrestling fan for life. I had always been watching since I was five, but this was when I was able to first relate to a wrestler's struggle to attain success, and it hooked me completely. I remember the hype being very well done for this show with all the action zones and mania shows leading up to it in Overdrive. Can't leave out the infamous Slammy Awards either, which I ended up taping.
Yes, we didn't talk about that. The Slammys returned.
Yes, Slammys did return. And Owen won two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he did. I also bought my first wrestling almanac from PWI.
No, he won one in 96, one in 97.
Oh, okay.
Just to save you the Facebook comments.
Yes, that's true. I thought he had two, and then he was carrying both at the when he announced later. But anyway, I read that thing every day front to back and started to become a fan of wrestling itself and its history instead of just the WWF. Now on to Mania. I kind of miss the more low-key, humbler days of Mania, although I prefer today's version of it just because it reflects what the show is supposed to be. The six-man tag was a good way to start, though Yoko should have gotten his hands on Corny to put a cap on this feud because it doesn't really continue after this, if I remember correctly. I enjoyed watching Piper beating the shit out of Goldust, including the sick Mike Tyson punch that Piper lays on Dustin. Pretty rough stuff for 96 WWF. The OJ Bronco stuff was a little silly, though. Come on, Vince, what the fuck? You could have had Piper being chased for real. The biggest star of all time, take that Hogan, makes his WrestleMania debut in a pretty decent match that gets colored by updates from Roving Roddy. Scott's boy H-Cubed gets his ass handed to him. Whatever. Vince is clearly desperate by bringing back the crazy asshole to boost business. Taker versus Big Kevin was a very good match between two big men. The pace lags at times, but it picks up a bit after the two jackknives from Diesel. Luckily, Taker picks up the win and keeps his now small WrestleMania streak intact. Meanwhile, Piper and Goldie arrive at the pond to finish their brawl. I was watching Mania live with my dad at the time and was worried he was going to get pissed with all the S&M clothing Goldust would be stripped down to. But luckily, he was can't wait to talk about someone else and their dad watching this.
Yes,
he was
into the show.
Yes, he was into the fight and didn't seem to mind. The Iron Man match for the gold was great at the time, but it just doesn't hold up today. Too many rest holds and not enough of a faster pace. I like the slight swerve of thinking Brett was going to retain, but it would have been a bad note to end Mania on, and Sean ends up living his boyhood dream and wins his first WWF championship. Too bad he won't enjoy it. Overall, decent WrestleMania, remembered for one match only, really. Brett now goes home to get some well-earned rest, and the Shawn Michaels, I guess the Shawn Michaels run has begun.
Mike Wilkins said, I like this Mania. There are others I like better, but there are Manias I like worse. It is basically because of three things as well. One, the Piper Goldust stuff. I thought both men did well with this angle and probably worked better than the original idea of Piper O.J. Simpson, quoting the Piper DVD. Okay. I don't know if that was actually a legitimate option. Taker Diesel match was classic contest of two big men putting on a great match before that had a great build. I agree with Greeny. This is Taker's best Mania match to date and be for some time. Before I get to the final part, I have to admit I marked out when the Warrior came out. I was a huge Warrior fan growing up, and I wasn't into Helmsley too much at that point, but that would come soon. Now the main event. If you compare this match to the first time you watch it, it's an instant classic. I think after one viewing, you can compare it to Savage Steamboat. After you watch it a couple times, though, it does lose its luster. I personally think it's a top 10 Mania match. This match was a huge deal at the time, and people did not go an hour, let alone 45 minutes, or rarely 30. Now, I've heard people comparing that this should not have been a big deal because Flair did it for years, blah, blah, blah. Well, not all those matches were nearly as entertaining as this one. It was huge at the time, lost some luster over the years, but still a great match. Sorry for the length here. It's a huge event, and this is where I really started watching weekly again. And I have to thank HBK for getting me back into the WWF product.
Wade Ferrari. Not the greatest WrestleMania, but still a pretty good card from top to bottom. With the main event being an hour long, there wasn't a lot of matches, especially for a Mania, but pretty much all of the matches were good. The six-man was an entertaining opener featuring two pretty cool teams. The heels winning was kind of a bummer, though, as I think most wanted to see Yoko get his revenge. They really wanted to build Vader up as a monster main event heel, though I understand it. The Goldust Piper stuff was fun, if not a little over the top. Austin picked up a nice win by beating Savio Vega in a solid match. I was real excited to see Warrior back, as I was a big fan of his when I was a kid. I was happy to see him win in quick fashion in his first match back, although in hindsight it probably wasn't a good move to have him squash a younger guy with a lot of upside like Helmsley. Undertaker Diesel didn't look promising on paper, but turned out to be a pretty good big man match. The Iron Man match was real good, although a little disappointing. The match seemed to drag at times as they slowed the pace down quite a bit, which I understand as they had to pace themselves since they were wrestling for so long. I think they should have had more falls, as I think that would have helped prevent the match from dragging too much.
Mr. Pfaff. Watch this one recently. The opening six-man was a decent opener with Yoko, Jake, and Ahmed being the most random team ever, in my opinion. Austin Vega was a good match, and the feud would continue, but a good Mania debut for Austin. Lawler said one of my favorite quotes when quoting DiBiase, "The rich get richer and the poor gets children." Hunter gets buried by a returning warrior. If I had told, if I would, if Hunter will ever, I wondered if Hunter would ever amount to anything after this. Backlot brawl is entertaining. Add another win to Taker, and Diesel is not the shit, I'm telling you. Brett Shawn is a great Iron Man match. To have it go to Southern Death was great. No other Iron Man match will touch it. Decent event overall.
Okay. Kieran Polland.
The Hot Scott.
Pretty good show, which to a normal fan looks flat on paper, judging from the amount of matches on the card. However, they range from good to excellent, and it is a very fun show overall. The crowd were okay, and they were quiet at times like Anaheim crowds are, but I don't recall them being too bad for the main event. The opener is a fun little way to get the show started, and it allowed Vader to get a big win at WrestleMania without completely killing his feud with Yoko, although I think the feud ended the next night, if I'm not mistaken. The Hollywood Backlot Brawl is cheesy humor that only Vince could come up with, and I don't really have a problem with it other than the obvious O.J. Simpson footage that they try to pass off as Piper chasing Goldust. We see the WrestleMania debut of my favorite wrestler of all time in Stone Cold Steve Austin, and while it gets overshadowed by Piper phoning in, it's still a decent match to watch if you can ignore all the background noise. My favorite moment of the night is without question the Ultimate Warrior squashing Hunter Hearst Helmsley in 30 seconds. And it's a minute 36, thank you. And in the process, no selling his finisher. I don't hate Helmsley, but knowing his position in the company now, the reputation that he holds, and my undying love for him, my meaning me, I just can't help but find it hilarious, especially when Helmsley knows that Warrior's never coming back to wrestle and thus won't be able to get his win back. It also seems hypocritical for the WWF to make fun of WCW using guys like Savage and Hogan when they were bringing back Jake, Warrior, and Piper to beef up their roster. I have a point to make about that, but Undertaker continues his undefeated streak in a good match with Diesel, who's nearing the end of his run. After having to deal with slugs like Gonzalez, Kama, and Mabel over the past few years, Taker must be thanking the heavens above for a big man who he can actually have a decent match with. A huge debut the next night will be the next step for Taker's legendary career. The Iron Man match is fantastic, but I can understand why some people can't get into it. It doesn't matter whether you're a wrestling fan or not. 60 minutes is a long time for watching just one match. I've also seen people complain that there weren't any decisions until overtime. I actually think that it helps the match, as it really shows how much Brett and Shawn wanted to become champion. They weren't pussyfooting about. They were determined to ensure that the other guy wasn't ahead of them at any time. And he mentions another match later on down the line. After watching Weekends, okay, not completely, but just overall fun show that's kind of overlooked when it comes to certain WrestleManias. Now, before you get to the next comment, I want to say something about what Kieran said. He talked about WCW, you know, making fun of WCW, but they had old guys. I have to defend Vince here because at least he didn't have Warrior, Jake, and Piper, like, going for the title and clogging main events.
Right, yeah.
Whereas you know, Hogan and Savage were at the main events all the time. That's pretty much the entire top of the card. So
yeah, he was
that's
using
my only...
them. He was using them to put guys over like he should
yeah,
have been.
Yeah, that's the only... I mean, I understand what Kieran's point, but I'm just saying it's not exactly the same thing.
So. All right, our buddy Sean. I remember getting this pay-per-view for my birthday. I was a big Shawn Michaels fan during this period. I really wanted to see him win the title. All through the build for this match, they made Brett seem like an afterthought to me. They built Shawn up so good coming back from the injury that you could tell he was poised to have a great run. As for the match itself, at the time I thought it was great. I'd never seen a match this long. They mixed it high spots with some rest spots, but I thought the end of the match was fantastic, and Brett played it off well when they had to restart the match. Shawn hitting Sweet Chin Music out of nowhere was great, and when he got the pin, I was so happy for him. The rest of the show was pretty good as well. The Diesel-Taker build was fantastic, and I thought the match was pretty good for two big men. Savio Austin was good. They always had good chemistry together. I was excited for Warrior's return, but after it happened, just felt out of place to me. This was no longer 1990. The act was old to me. Overall, a good show with a great ending. And I think I'll grab the next one.
Be my guest.
DeFazio, DeFazio. Okay, WrestleMania top to bottom. Taker Diesel match was very cool, but the match I liked, wow, that night Shawn made me proud. That night when he won the title, him and the Hitman pulled an amazing 60-minute Iron Man match, like every suplex, even the almost pin attempts were amazing. I was like, this is exciting. Then we got the sudden death match, but we got the restart, then the super kick, then the 1-2-3, followed by Vince's words. The boyhood dream has come true for Shawn Michaels. Wow, my dad stopped hating Shawn, and I was shocked. Like, even the next day, it was all over my school. It was like, big deal. I was 8 years old in the third grade. Like, come on. Pay-per-view set the tone for the rest of 96, and that, my PACs, is my WrestleMania feedback. For your boy, DeFazio.
Made that easy on yourself, didn't you? It's like the shortest sentence that he ever typed.
It was all one. There was no period at all.
It's true. And he didn't. And his dad didn't call anybody an asshole either. He knew it better. Okay, Ed Harris. Decent enough addition to Mania with a very good main event that would have been better with more pinfalls, which would have created some good tension and probably woken the crowd up some. The real highlight of the show for me is the Taker Diesel match, which ended up being way better than had any right to be. We'll even it out. I'll take the next one for you.
Okay.
Jared Incel. WrestleMania 12 is really built around one match, and we all know what it is. The Iron Man match between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart has been a polarizing match in WWF history. Some say it's the greatest WrestleMania match of all time, while others dismiss it as an overrated snooze fest. I'm willing to say it's a classic match, but I don't think it's the greatest WrestleMania bout ever. This match is a great technical showcase for the company's best workers. The WWF really tried to push the drama drama to the build-up to the match, but considering the way Shawn and Bret were used in the previous 3 months, it was so damn obvious that HBK would win the title. To their credit, the two wrestlers were still able to put some drama into this match, even if the finish was predictable. I question having a match like this in Anaheim as opposed to an established WWF stronghold like New York or something. As for the rest of the card, well, it's fairly forgettable. The opening six-man tag is okay, and it's a bit surreal seeing the new-look Stone Cold Steve Austin, which much of his Ringmaster trademarks is still evident, DiBiase, the theme music, and the Million Dollar Belt. He puts on a decent bout with Savio Vega. The Hollywood backlot brawl between Goldust and Piper is a convoluted mess. Ultimate Warrior comes back simply to set Helmsley's pushback a few months. The underrated bout here has to be Undertaker versus Diesel. This is a pretty solid big man match that tends to get overlooked by many. Overall, a solid WrestleMania. Still, the absence of guys like Razor Ramon and the 1-2-3 Kid is somewhat noticeable.
1980s NWA enhancement talent Scott Scallion. While I really liked the Iron Man match at the time, over the years, my opinion gradually changed. I began to view it as a good but overrated main event. However, I recently watched it again and realized I have to give the match the praise it deserves. Shawn and Bret have an epic and emotional battle that ends with an iconic WrestleMania moment. The only criticism that I will hold onto is the fact that they took time to go over all the rules at the beginning of the match, but never mentioned sudden death overtime. I think it takes a little away from Shawn's victory that Gorilla had to order the match to continue. The Hollywood backlot brawl took up too much of the show, but the rest of the card was pretty good. I love the build for Taker Diesel. They had one of the best big man matches to date. I was really excited for the return of the Ultimate Warrior, but that excitement would quickly fade. Overall, a decent WrestleMania match that could have been better with some improved booking and a hotter crowd.
Okay, Ryan Schmock. WrestleMania 12 had its share of good and bad things. The free-for-all with the Huckster, Nacho Man, and Billionaire Ted all getting killed with the Vincent Lawler shadows reminded me of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Oh, wait, it was Mystery Science Theater 3000. Glad they ended the skit there. Tag title finals delivered well, but should have been on the pay-per-view show. Then there could have been a battle royal on the free-for-all with guys like Aldo Montoya, Bob Holly, Tatanka, 1-2-3 Kid, Isaac Yankum, DDS, Duke Drosy, Barry Horowitz, Justin Hawk, Bradshaw, Marty Jannetty, Leaf Cassidy, The Bushwhackers, Fatu, Bob Backlund, Bart Gunn, and Hakushi.
Okay, well, there's everyone who's left off the card, if anyone's curious.
ATL Hopper? I guess, I don't know. Six-man tag was a great way to kick off the pay-per-view. Shocked seeing Fuji wave an American flag. I think this was booked as Yoko, Vader in a singles match, then Jake and Ahmed and Bulldog and Owen in a tag match. Austin Vega, pretty good match. The return of the Warrior, I marked out huge for that. Warrior squashing Helmsley was fun. Mero debuting and fighting with Helmsley, also good. Piper Goldust was a good alley fight, but it should have been Razor getting his revenge, but not the title, as I think it was a non-title match. Undertaker Diesel was a good back-and-forth match, with Taker going 5-0. Iron Man match was long, but going no falls in 60 minutes, then into overtime, made the match a five-star classic. I think this is the only Iron Man match that had no falls in the 60-minute time limit. Overall, Mania 12, a good event with changes, debuts, and departures to follow.
Ryan Howard, since giving up on Facebook, I haven't got a comment on a show since 1992, so let's get started. Free for all match put Sunny over as she flashed her Slammy award-winning best buns at Phineas to let her team get the victory. With this, wish this match to get more than 3 minutes and had been on the pay-per-view, but it's a quick little match. I've mentioned the free-for-all VHS before, and this match is on it. It's one of the very few free-for-all matches that has storyline implications around it, as we start Phineas' infatuation with Sonny. Opener was solid, got Camp Cornette over his heels, and that could be potential challenges later in the year. I know he gets even worse as time goes on, but Jake was pretty bad to watch around this time. Cue the Be on the Mat soundbite. Austin versus Savio. Solid start to a solid feud to establish Austin. Savio was well over enough with the crowd and was able to put on a good match to make this more than just a one-sided feud. Just the beginning for these two. Warrior versus Helmsley, trying to think of positives. Debut of Sable, that's about it. Poor Helmsley. At least he gets a new feud next month. Put this disaster behind him. Diesel Taker. Taker gets a big man who can actually move in the ring. Must have thrown him off a bit from what he was used to. Excellent match with one person's WWF time almost nearing an end, while the other's about to begin with one of the most memorable feuds in WWF history. But I'll wait till next month to talk about that one. Piper Goldust. Piper hitting Goldust with the bat in the head was pretty brutal. Overall, his build is a brawl, and that's exactly what it was. Marlena looked hot. Goldust and Dragon, on the other hand, scared the bejesus out of me as a kid. HBK versus Bret. Get him the fuck out of my ring. This is my moment. After reading Bret's book and hearing Shawn said that to the referee, pretty much showed why this feud is far from over, both backstage and in the ring. For a match that was an hour, yes, it was a lot of rest holds, but did you really think they would go full steam for an hour? We start the reign of HBK's show-stopping pay-per-view main events, at least for a while. The Hitman says goodbye. Hello, Lonesome Dove.
Yes. We go from the former Philly cleanup hitter to the biggest Braves fan on the planet, Jay Hinchey. Yes, we are at WrestleMania 12 and one of my favorite early manias. One thing, though, I wished that the Anaheim crowd, while not bad, would have been a little more lively. They reacted at the right times, but they seemed to be uninterested for some of the night as well. Free for all, the Body Donnas capture the vacant WWF tag team titles in the finals of the tag tournament after the Smoking Guns had to forfeit, defeating the Godwins. It also started Phineas thinking Sonny had the hots for him. Solid opener with a six-man tag to kick things off with Camp Cornette versus Yoko, Ahmed, and Jake. Camp Cornette gets the win here to continue their run as one of the best heel stables at this time period. Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Savio Vega was next and is another good match on this night. These two would go to continue their feud over the spring and always brought the best in each other. Austin wins his WrestleMania debut here. Ultimate Warrior versus Helmsley. Oh boy, well, what can you say other than Hunter gets squashed and the Warrior is back in the WWF. Also had the debuts of Mark Merrow and Sable on this show backstage. Undertaker vs. Diesel, probably Taker's best WrestleMania match to this point, and a really underrated one as well with Big Daddy Cool. Really good match overall with Diesel's run in the WWF nearing its end, but I know you guys will cover that on the next show. Hot Rod vs. Goldust. Ah, yes, the infamous Hollywood backlot brawl, and what a fight this was. I still get a kick out of seeing the OJ parody chase scenes and Piper kissing Goldust after stripping him down to nothing almost. Good stuff there as well. Bret Hart vs. Shawn Michaels, the 60-minute Iron Man match for the WWF title. I really don't understand why some people give this match crap sometimes. Sure, it has a lot of rest holds, but I don't think Vince wanted them to go full-on for a solid hour. The finish is great with Shawn and the sharpshooter, and the time runs out. Gorilla Monsoon orders overtime, and HBK hits Sweet Chin Music to realize his boyhood dream. Shawn's reign is here, and the Hitman takes a long vacation from the WWF. All in all, outside the Ultimate Warrior Helmsley squash, this is a good WrestleMania and worth watching.
Steve Riddle, WrestleMania 12 is an okay show, remember, for a few things. The opener was decent enough as Camp Cornette gets a big win. Cornette escapes the wrath of Yokozuna. Austin Vega is very solid after that gets forgotten in the annals of WrestleMania. After a few big wins on pay-per-view, Helmsley gets squashed by the returning Ultimate Warrior, and that's the only memorable thing. Well, that plus the debuts of Sable and Mark Merrow. Taker Diesel is a much better match than it's expected to be as Taker goes 5-0 and embarks on perhaps one of the greatest feuds. Hollywood backlot brawl is a tale of two halves. The first part in the backlot is a great fight capped off with a OJ chase. The second part's okay, only highlighted by Piper stripping Goldust down and giving him the big kiss. It's sad that this will be Piper's last pay-per-view for 7 years. Now the main event, and I don't remember any match that is as divided as this. Half think it's the greatest match ever. Others think it's overrated. I personally think it holds up to the hype and is a fantastic match. Shawn Michaels achieves his lifelong dream to win the title, and Bret Hart would take some time off. Overall, not a terrible show in a decent year that was 96. And I'll grab the next one, J.R. Senor D'Amato. The backlot brawl was quite the spectacle in the gold Cadillac and the Bronco. Piper threw Goldust onto the snack table and hit with a bowl of chips as a tribute to the great DeFazio. This feud was right up Piper's alley. He's been firing off homophobic zingers in his promos for over 30 years.
Yes, that is true. Okay.
This is Peter Khalil.
Okay, Peter. Peter, this is one of my personal favorite shows and one of the four best WrestleManias ever, behind only three, 17, and 19. Okay, I've seen all 28. First, you have one of the best six-man openers ever. The face team has Jake Roberts, Yoko, and Ahmed. Never cared for Ahmed and Yoko. Jake was always better as a heel. Then on the heel side, three of the best ever, and it's a crime none of them are in the Hall of Fame yet. Owen Hart, British Bulldog, and perhaps the greatest big man to grace the ring, Vader. Vader was awesome, dominating the match, and Vader bombing Jake. The Hollywood backlot was freaking awesome. Piper and Goldust sold well. The car chase was good. Savio and Stone Cold was good, but this would prove Austin's awesomeness. This next match will get me some heat. I love Ric Flair. Thinks Hacksaw Jim Duggan is an ass clown, but for me, it's always good to see Helmsley lose. This was a guilty pleasure to watch Warrior squash Helmsley. At the time, I loved Warrior and hated Helmsley. Though I personally think Helwig is an asshole, and I'm starting to respect Helmsley. Taker and Diesel was good for a big man match. Not knowing Diesel was going to WCW, there actually was a part of me that thought Diesel would win. Then one of my favorite matches ever, the Iron Man. I don't care who hates who or who did what. I love this match and think both Bret and Shawn are two of the best ever. Sure, there are some hot botch spots and would like to see some falls, but I'd still give this 4 3/4 stars at worst. This match only behind Smothers, some of his five favorite matches of all time. Loves this show.
All right, why don't you grab Dave Hall, then I'll grab the Chasine's Madness.
Yeah, Jesus, good God. Okay, Dave Hall, one half of the Down Under Power Trip with the birthday boy, Michael McDonald. A mixed bag of a show, which is really carried by two matches. Vince McMahon focuses on in-ring work over celebs and glamour, and not everyone is up to the task. Camp Cornette meet Jake, Yoko, and Ahmed, but the match should have been Yoko and Vader. I actually felt that the addition of the others watered down this match. Poor Helmsley has to look like an idiot for the ultimate idiot. The backlot brawl is an utter waste of time. However, Steve Austin, now Stone Cold, and Savio put on a very good match. Undertaker and Diesel is a guilty little pleasure that continues to develop the WrestleMania streak of Taker and allows Diesel to continue developing his badass persona. It's a shame he leaves in just over a month. Finally, Bret and Shawn put on a clinic. I'm one of those who really enjoys this match and feel that it's one of the all-time greats, but not in the league of Flair and Steamboat, which, of course, was a few years earlier. Three good matches, three bad, and so in the middle, and in the end, a middle-of-the-road WrestleMania.
All right, buddy Chastain's, I'm just going to kind of cherry-pick some of his stuff here because he wrote a novel. And he's good. He does these good stream of thought reviews like I do for a lot of things. He just watched the show today to get a refresher. So Vince McMahon's often overlooked in the greatest when the greatest PBP men in wrestling history discussed. His unbridled enthusiasm opening the show and his work throughout was a testament to his greatness behind the mic. He also misses the days when Jim Johnston was responsible for all of the wrestling entrance themes. Contrary to some of the posters above, I didn't feel this crowd was that flat. They could have been more energetic, but they popped at the right moments and stayed with the show. Jake may have been past his prime, but he sure got a hell of a pop for the DDT. Makes it even more of a shame the road he ultimately went down, and then he plugs his tremendous territory wars, of course, AWA. Vader's mask looks like it hurts when it crushes his nose on close-ups. She may have turned out to be a wigger or whatever, kind of low class, but Sonny, a wigger, huh? But Sonny during this time period captures my heart as well as Nevermind. The Backlot Brawl is a definite precursor to become the hardcore division. I enjoyed the stuff in the alley and the stuff in the ring. Could have done without that, seeing dusted lingerie. But I thought the OJ stuff was phony and convoluted. Took me out of the suspension of reality I enjoy watching when I enjoy watching wrestling. Apparently the inflation made the $1 million belts price go up. Lawler first was worth $2 million after the match. No matter what anyone says, no doubt Austin was an outstanding wrestler up to and during this time. There's absolutely no indication of the explosion his career was going to take place in the coming months. Entrance theme was great for the serial killer concept. I'll keep it brief, but the Helmsley-Warrior match could not have gone any other way. Helmsley was not hurt by the loss. In fact, kickstarted a great feud with Mark Morrow moments later. Warrior needed a huge win on his return to look like an indestructible force. This was a different time and done right. Was Todd McGill not ever a complete tool? I enjoyed Diesel Undertaker. It was a little slow-paced. A visual of Nash approaching the ring with his video behind him and the truck bearing down was excellent. It is audibly saying, "I'm the shit, I'm telling you," as he climbed the ring steps. Anyone notice Roddy Piper's tribute to his old foe, Jimmy Snuka, right before they cut away from the camera for him for good? Too much has already been said regarding the Ironman match. I'm no secret, I'm a Bret Hart mark, and he is my all-time favorite. I'll keep this short and sweet. Previous poster mentioned that sudden death could have been mentioned during the rules. I agree with them. If it had been, this would have been easier for me to swallow. I have no issue with HBK going over this match, but the way it was done left me feeling frustrated. Coming to the camp that is delighted there were no falls in regulation, it made each near fall, hell, each pin attempt so much more tense and exciting. Judging this match on subsequent viewings is not fair, because the tension is gone. To really judge this match, you need to put yourself in the moment and forget about the result. Hebner's accent is awesome. He calls it an Iron Man match and says this is for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Love it. I also never ever get tired of Jerry Lawler making age jokes about Stu and Helen. My favorites on the show were, "Hey Vince, Stu's still awake. Helen was shopping earlier in an antique store and they kept her." Sorry this is long. Can't help myself. And why don't you finish off with Grant Owens.
Yes, Grant Owens, who almost hosts the show because he lives nearby. This pay-per-view took place in Anaheim, yet I ordered it on pay-per-view. I know Scott, yes, complains that this crowd was dead, but I can tell you exactly why it was dead. I wasn't there. Anyway, the highlights for me were the OJ-style Goldust car chase and the Iron Man match. I love Shawn's ring entrance. Some local information. The harness that Shawn uses to fly down to the ring was used by the Mighty Ducks hockey mascot and still is today.
Quack, quack, Mr. Ducksworth.
That's right. I love the Iron Man match at the time, but it just doesn't hold up today. The first half of the match drags a lot, but because Bret and Shawn are two of my favorites, I will still pop it in from time to time and fast forward to the second half of the match.
All right. That was like the Iron Man feedback.
You still with us, Graham?
Yeah, you alive over there?
You guys are honestly getting too big to read all the feedback.
Well, we have to. That was our hook from the day one. We said we were always going to include. But I am going to give some constructive criticism here. Thank you, everyone, for coming over to the message board. Thank you for bringing your feedback and listening. We mentioned this before, and many of you complied, and some are seeping back into the trend. You don't have to say every match title, and you don't have to give us any play-by-play. Just give us your opinion, because we're talking about all the play-by-play and what happened in each match during the review. So just just say, opener, I like this, this, and this. You know, we know what happened. We don't need the finish or anything like that. But again, we thank you for the feedback. We're always going to read all of it. We don't care if Graham hates you or hates anything else about it. He's just a bitter man. So we want to thank Grant for joining us as always. Of course, I hope he had a good time until the end there. It was fun to talk about such a divisive show. So With that, we're going to bid you all adieu. We hope you have a great weekend. Go back and check out our headlines from this past week. Talked about Raw, previewed Extreme Rules. So enjoy that pay-per-view this weekend. We'll be back next week with some headlines. We'll recap that, as well as In Your House, Good Friends, Better Enemies. I guess technically In Your House 7. So, and we'll also have an update, hopefully, maybe a little bit more of when our hiatus is coming up. So with that said, visit us on Twitter, Place2BPodcast. You can visit Graham at thehistoryofwwe.com, Facebook, The Place to Be Podcast, or History of WWE as well, Bigelow34.proboards.com. Please, let's get some chatter generating there, because Facebook, as we said, is a complete and utter disaster at this moment. So, with that said, for Graham Campdon and Scott Crispolo, I am Justin Rosero. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Take care.
Love my match, Dennis.
I stay focused. No role models in the world living right, so I show kids. Y'all sing the hook while I roll this. They go, get up, get up, get up, get up. You get wet up, wet up, wet up, wet up. Don't get set up, set up, set up, set up. You better step up, step up, step up. We coming with the hook, hook, ha. Everybody, hook, hook, ha. Tell your people, hook, hook. Juicy. Made my debut with the Fugees, now I'm loony. Money hungry, self-centered nigga acting moody. Got a wild style like the movie, pack a Thule. Spend hundreds on earth, give the singles to my cutie. Bulletproof hats for the cats that wanna shoot me. Hanging on my block with Big L, Season Mooney. Huffing on the Lucy, me and Jen's 2D. Hood rat hoes be acting goofy. Sunburnt skin and white lips like a moolie. Rappers need to think if they really wanna move me. Something to grow on, face one, yours truly. Get up, get up, get up, get up. You get wet up, wet up, wet up, wet up. Don't get set up, set up, set up, set up. You better step up, step up, step up. I'm coming with the hook.